Hello, Donnie.
Hey, what's going on, Mike?
Not much. Just read some Vibe. I like that comic book.
So you're the one that's buying it, eh?
Yeah, me and Knutson are on the Vibe kick.
I haven't tried it, to be honest with you.
That's really good.
It's just I have such a bad taste from the 80s Vibe with the...
Oh, it's not even close to that. It is so good. It is so good, man. It's a story about brothers, man. It's pretty awesome. And then they have like little glimpses of other characters that you've seen before, like in the old DCU. It's pretty damn cool.
Do they have anybody from like the Detroit Justice League?
They have Gypsy.
Is she like a real character or is she just in the background?
She's an alien. And she might be Darkseid's daughter.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, that is very weird. It's crazy. It's crazy stuff, man. It's good.
I've read Avengers number 22.
Right on.
43 and 44. And I read Batman 188 and 172.
188 and 172?
Yeah. All from this, like 65 to 66. At 67. And you know what's weird? Is like if you compare the writing style to the two books, the two companies, dude, it's like two whole different worlds, man. Like Marvel writing style was so much better. Like the stories are so much better than, you know what I mean? Like
it's different.
It is. It's like DC was still holding on to like that golden age kind of.
Yeah.
You know, and Marvel is kind of like just doing its own thing. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what made them popular. I mean,
I could see, you know, it's like me reading the new Valiant books and discovering this whole new universe because I never really read Valiant when it came out.
Oh, Donnie. Right? Oh, so good.
Well, I didn't read it in the 90s and stuff when it came out. I'm reading it now. And I every time I finish a trade, I just go, this must be what a kid felt like in 1963, 64 when they picked up a Marvel comic.
You know, that's exactly the way I felt when I read Valiant. I felt like I was getting in on the ground floor, like in a universe that was just, you know, building on itself.
Right.
And it had continuity. I'm a fan of continuity. I think you are too.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah. I don't mind other stuff. Chris, are you there?
Yo.
Hey
Chris, how you doing?
Hey Donnie, nice to have you join us.
Thank you, sir. It's nice to be here.
We were just talking about some Valiant. We started with some Detroit Justice League and then it ended up in Valiant. And we're talking about how Marvel was so different from DC in the 60s.
Man, yeah. You're 10 minutes in. I feel like you guys have recorded a whole episode. No, my lady is sick.
Ah.
So I was taking care of some extra business this morning.
Getting some medications.
Yeah.
Taking care of the dog.
Yep. I made sure I had to take the dog out for an extra walk so she didn't start getting restless during the recording.
Yeah, my dog won't go outside because we have like a fog and it's like really like misty. I'm like, you gotta go poop out there. Come on.
She won't
go outside.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were talking about comics, so I figured I'd jump in and make this episode start off with medical issues again.
Yeah, that's where we usually kick it off.
But yeah, she came down with something all of a sudden. It hit her pretty hard, and I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's in my system, but I'm swallowing handfuls of vitamins and hopefully I'll fight it off.
Use some other box. Come on.
Yeah.
Use your mother box. Ping, ping, ping.
Hopefully something will work.
Yeah, maybe Light Ray can heal you.
Yeah. I think Light Ray helped out my grandfather, though. I mentioned him last week, so I'll say that he had his surgery, and I saw him last weekend, and he's recovering phenomenally well. He's got a big old scar down his chest, but... he's doing really well. So
that's awesome.
Excellent.
Yeah. Because I mentioned, for anyone who didn't hear it, the last episode, he had open heart surgery a few weeks ago, and he's just doing really well. So happy to report that.
That's very cool.
But so how did we connect the threads between Valiant, Detroit Justice League, and 60s Marvel and DC? I mean, that's
how we roll.
First, he said he was reading Vibe, and he's really into he likes that book. So I asked him if any of the other characters from Detroit Justice League showed up, because I can't read Vibe, because I just look at him and think of the 1980s character that spoke with, you know, like, what Chu doing?
What you doing?
What you doing?
What you doing, S.A.?
You know, he sounds like Cheech from Cheech and Chong in my head, and I can't get And so he said... What was it, Gypsy you said was
Yeah, in the Gypsy's book? In the book.
Oh, okay, cool.
And she and might Amanda be Darkseid's daughter, which I don't that's weird, but yeah, so then I was talking about, because I read a couple of Batman issues and a couple of Avenger issues from this, like, the same time period, and the writing style was so different. Like, to me, DC seemed like they were still holding on to that golden age. Of writing, and Marvel was just so new, and like, there's not a lot different from storytelling from in the Marvel sense, really. You know what I mean? Like, it kind of feels like a modern comic in a sense, like the storytelling aspect of it, just a lot more wordier,
right?
And but I was saying to Mike, like, I've really been enjoying, like, the new Valiant stuff. I've been reading it in trade. And I have no exposure to the universe at all.
Right.
And I said, that's how a kid must have felt in 1963, 64, picking up a Marvel book. Like, just enthralled in the entire universe. Because I'm just like, I can't wait for these new Valiant trades to come out.
Oh, man. Wait till you get to the Harbinger War. Holy crap.
It's already pre-ordered, man.
It's so good.
I haven't read
number four yet, but my God, it's good.
I pre-ordered everything but the second Archer and Armstrong trade, which is at the shop now. I have to go get that.
So you're seeing you're talking about how you're seeing the pieces of the universe kind of coming together, and when, like, early 60s Marvel, when you know kids were around to see, you know, Fantastic Four debut, and then they had another title, and there's this tight continuity there.
Yep. And it's just like, it's a, you know, like the issues of Batman I read, one of them is, it's the tale of the Invisible Knights, where Batman and Robin are sleeping over in a museum because these suits of armor are trying to destroy these, like, opals that are in there, because, I don't know, In the medieval times, that's what their job was to do. These warriors' job was to do, and it's just I enjoyed it, but I enjoyed it in a cheesy aspect. You know what I mean? Like, and then you turn around and you got like Avengers number 22, where it's Captain America and Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch and Hawkeye against Power Man, and back then Power Man he's Atlas now. From Thunderbolt, you know what I mean? Like that guy. Him and the Enchantress. And he was more like a Wonder Man kind of and you got like the team is breaking up because the city council said that they were dangerous. And I didn't know the city council had that much power in 1965.
They had a lot more power than they do today.
But I mean, like, that's kind of funny. But I mean, like, you got Captain America's trying to keep the team together, but they're all fighting all the time. And it's just, I don't know, it was just really good.
You know? It's like, Captain America, excuse me, but the friends of the library have requested that you disband.
But he was kind of a jerk. Like, Captain America in the early Avengers issues talk like he was kind of a jerk. Like, he wasn't awe-inspiring. He
That's
was just
because
like,
he had a bunch of criminals he had to keep in line.
He was just like, he's just like, oh, shut your mouth, girly. This is the way it's going to go. You know what I mean? It's like, wow.
I mean, that's when he had the roster of, like you said, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, who were from the Evil Mutants. And didn't he have Hawkeye at the time?
Yeah, Hawkeye, who was a bad guy.
He was a bad guy, too. I mean, it was like a Thunderbolts.
But I'm telling you, man, these books are so much fun. And another comparison is, what's the other Batman book? This was phenomenal, but like I said, in a kind of hipster ironic way, where Batman 188, and the cover is Batman and Robin fighting, they're dodging a guy who's shaped and dressed like a number two pencil.
Oh, I have that issue. That's awesome.
And it says, here comes the rubber head villain, the eraser who tried to rub out Batman. And it's about this guy who was obsessed with erasers, and he went to college with Bruce Wayne, and Bruce Wayne, I don't know, he wound up dating some girl that this guy liked, and so he quit college. This dude quit college and found this magical eraser. And he's charging criminals 20% of their haul, and he could erase all the evidence. And he wears shoes that are as sharp as the point of a number two pencil. So don't get kicked with them, because you'll. So that's the kind of.
You'll get lead poisoning. Okay,
yeah. Okay, so that's 1966, or, you know. And then you look at Avengers 44 and 43 and 44, where they introduced the Red Guardian, and China and Russia are hanging out together, and they're trying to take over the world with this like psychosis ray thing, where it makes people hallucinate their worst fears, and it's like this big intricate story, and the Black Widow's in it, and Hawkeye's in love with the Black Widow, so she's captured by these people, and he grabs Hercules, who's not an Avenger yet. He's just kind of hanging out, and they go to try and rescue her, and then they get captured, and then you find out, like, the Red Guardian is really Black Widow's husband, who she thought was dead, and it's like this big, and then the other Avengers in the next issue have to come and rescue them, and it's like the team is Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch, Goliath, Wasp, and then Hawkeye and Captain America, and then Black Widow and Hercules aren't on the team yet, but they're there, you know. And there's like this big fight where they're fighting all these soldiers, and this big intricate plot line of, oh my God, what do I do? I thought my husband was dead, but I'm in love with Hawkeye, and it's like all this stuff, and they have this huge fight. The Russian leader, man, he was really into, we have to have the Red Guardian fight Captain America. I mean, he said that for like two issues straight. Like, I want to see, he basically said what like the reader is thinking. He's like, I want to see this fight. Let's make it happen. You know? And so they did. And then like Red Guardian, spoiler alert for a comic from 1967, he sacrifices himself so that the Avengers and Black Widow could get away, because he's still in love with her. And I mean, it was this huge, intricate story. And
the Red Guardian was in love with Black Widow?
Yeah, because it was his wife.
Okay.
And so he sacrifices himself so they could get away, and the whole thing blows up and whatnot. But it's like around the same time period, and Batman is fighting a guy dressed like a pencil. All right? who wrote this? I think this was it Jerry?
It's Roy Thomas.
Roy Thomas, that's right. Yep, and John Buscema.
The covers during this time were some of my favorite covers. Like, it just was such an odd group to put together. I like odd groups that are put together.
Me too.
And like the Champions. Oh my God. That's the weirdest freaking group I've ever seen, and it was entertaining as hell.
Yep, I have all 17 issues somewhere in the box. I sure do.
That team had, like, no chemistry whatsoever.
No, it made no sense why you would put these people together.
The Defenders had better chemistry than the Champions.
Exactly.
It was like, usually when you form a team, you have, like, you know, somebody that has the brain, somebody that has the strength. This one, right. It was, like, just odd. You had Black Widow, Ghost Rider, Hercules.
Angel and Iceman.
Angel and Iceman, two mutants.
And it was just weird. Like, there was no real common goal either. It was just like, oh, we all live in California. You know? Let's hang out at my dad's penthouse, you know? It was pretty wild. Yeah, I do. I have all those issues. I'm really into that weird stuff, too. Like, the weird teams.
Yeah.
The weirder, the better.
Except for the Detroit JLA.
I couldn't get past the vibe racism. I just couldn't get past it.
They had an interesting team. I mean, they had no big guns then except for Martian Manhunter and Aquaman.
Oh, yeah, and Aquaman was such a jerk.
Yeah,
he was a jerk to those guys.
Martian Manhunter is the only one that kind of took that team under his wing and tried to make them the Justice League.
I just remember that scene. I talk about it a lot, but that scene where Steel, they're all living in Steel's compound in Detroit.
Yeah.
Steel goes to his own in the ground pool, and he goes to dive in it, and he goes to swim, and Aquaman's in there and just punches him in the face while he's swimming. And Steel's like, what the hell, man? And Aquaman's like, you got to be ready for anything if you want to be in the Justice League.
He's preparing. He's going to swim in his own pool.
I'd be like, get out of my house. Just get out.
Why did you punch him in the face?
Punched him in his face in his own house while he's swimming in his own pool, and then told him, and then gave him shit about it too.
Gotta be ready for anything, even in your own house.
That's awesome. He's constantly setting booby traps and jumping out from behind the couch and be on your toes at all times. Well, I mean, in defense of that Batman issue, erasers can be pretty dangerous. I still have a scar in my hand from the sissy test in second grade. So,
what was the sissy test? Where you get the eraser and just rub it against your skin real fast, or what?
Yeah, one of the stupidest things I've ever done. It's like a constant reminder that I'm not as smart as I think I am.
So you have an appreciation for this eraser head.
Yeah, I'm glad.
You could relate.
Yeah, it makes me all the more grateful.
When Donnie was talking, you weren't like laughing along. You were in fear.
The whole time I'm making fun of it, you were just sitting back going, they are dangerous. You don't understand.
You don't understand the eraser.
You don't understand.
I was sitting here saying, if this story doesn't end with Batman out on top, I'm gonna leave.
it was funny though, because like he gets the eraser, gets 20% of whatever the criminal's haul is, okay? Mm-hmm. And he'll erase all your. So Batman goes undercover as an Italian organ grinder.
Was Robin the monkey?
He was, but he wasn't dressed like a monkey. He wore the monkey suit with the short shorts and the vest.
Are you kidding me?
I swear to God, I'm not making this up. And so I don't know how Batman's organ grinder persona was going to rob something, because let's face it, you're going to remember the organ grinder. You know what I mean? Like, if the cops come to question you, you're going to be like, that organ grinder with the underage boy was kind of shady, I think. But yeah, they had Robin dancing around with a cup, and he had a big stereotypical stereotypical Italian mustache he had on, and it was hysterical.
I can't believe somebody would walk by and see them as a...
And then when the eraser goes and he's like, Hey, you're not Giuseppe the Organ Grinder. You're Bruce Wayne. I know you from college. And then he pulls off his number two eraser helmet. And he's like, remember me from college? And it was just funny. I mean, you have to, it's got to be reprinted somewhere. And you got to find it.
I like the eraser guy in that. Like, that's actually kind of a, despite his gimmick, that's kind of a serious power to be able to wink things out of existence. And he's just like, he just rests on his laurels and takes 20% from petty crime.
And it's just weird. Like, he grew up loving erasers. Like, that was his thing.
He must have not been good writing it down the first time. He just had to erase it.
I wonder. Well, they show like flashbacks and the teacher scolding him and stuff, and he's like, "If you don't stop erasing the chalkboard, you're gonna wear it out." And you know what I mean? Like, it was just so strange.
And then in the 80s, he was replaced by Whiteout.
And then Mike Nesmith left the Monkees because his mother.
I always thought that was the weirdest thing, like, of all the Monkees facts I've seen. His mom invented Whiteout.
I remember watching that movie on VH1 or MTV, and I was just like, when they got to that point where they're all sitting around this big swimming pool, and he just goes, yeah, I'm out of the band. I'm leaving the band. They're like, why? And he's like, my mom invented Whiteout, and I'm going to go work for her. And I went, is this fucking real? Does that happen? Is that true? Yeah, it was true.
Yeah. I remember using Whiteout when I was in typing class. It's like using it all the time because I couldn't type worth a damn. I'm glad they had it, though, because that's all I do now is type.
I know, right? In retrospect, like, I remember in high school, I was like, no, I'm not taking typing because I have a girlfriend. Yeah. Because that's where all the guys would go to meet chicks. Like, right. Well, type, you know. And I was like, oh, I have a girlfriend. She's gonna get mad if I take typing. And now I'm sitting here in the computer age and I'm like typing with two fingers, like, the.
That's like, that was your high school's equivalent of like going out to the bar on the weekend by yourself. It's like,
typing.
Why are you taking typing class? Are you trying to meet women?
Yeah, exactly.
I always find it interesting, like, because my parents, I didn't have typing class, but my parents got a computer early on and I was interested in it as a result. So now, just from using a computer all my life, you know, I'm super fast typer. Mm-hmm. And I got that muscle memory, and it makes me realize, you know, I always thought it would be cool to play guitar, but I've never had the discipline to get good enough where I'm actually interested in what I'm playing, you know?
Right.
Like, I sit down to learn a guitar, and I want to be able to play songs I like, and I don't want to have to practice to get there. And I always thought, like, if I could rig a guitar up to the computer so that I could play the guitar to operate the computer, then I would actually probably learn to play the guitar.
Wow, you were like years ahead of Guitar Hero.
Yeah, seriously. I was Rocksmith before there was a thing called Rocksmith.
You would have got all the chicks in typing.
You could have been retired right now.
Seriously,
if I was, I'm sitting there in typing class and I was actually like controlling my computer with a 6-string guitar, I would have had all the ladies.
You would have been like the John Bon Jovi of typing class.
Mm-hmm. Typing for me was mandatory, but I'm glad it was because the two-finger thing, I don't know if it... I do know a programmer that I've worked with in the past that two fingers and she's faster than me. I'm like, how do you do that? It's like... Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
She's like playing chopsticks on the piano.
Yeah, it's like, it's amazing. I can't figure out how she's faster. It's bizarre. That you said Batman 172?
Yes, Attack of the Invisible Knights was the one. Oh, and you were, how they were making the knights move and attacking Batman, and some criminal had a magnet gun. And don't think about the science because it's not there. And he was using the magnet gun to move the suits of armor to make it look like they were haunted and fight people. Like they're doing like kung fu fighting and the dude's controlling it with a magnet gun. It was weird.
I think it could happen.
It could. Anything.
It's sophisticated magnet.
And then there was two stories in the Batman books. And the second one was Robin's unassisted triple play where he goes after the Flower Gang on his own. That was written by Gardner Fox, which I thought was kind of cool, man. Some serious Silver Age right there, you know?
Yeah.
John Broome wrote the other one, The Attack of the Invisible Knights. But the other Batman book has no credits, besides Carmine Infantino did the cover.
Number 188?
I think that's it. Let me see. Where is it?
Nobody wanted credit for it.
Like he's fighting a pencil, man. Like,
it says
188.
188's Robert Carringer and John Broome.
Where'd you get that? I'm on Comic Book DB. And
I'm on my own database, Comic Base. And it's got Sheldon Moldoff is the artist. It's even got inkers.
Yeah, and the cover, though, is Infantino, am I correct?
Let me see if it's got the cover. Hold on. Yep, it's Infantino. You got
and
it.
There's a letter in there about how Carmen Infantino came to, because I live in Connecticut, and I guess in Windsor, there was a Windsor, Connecticut, there's a school for handicapped kids in the 60s, and Carmine Infantino went there and taught the kids how to draw, and he drew caricatures of each kid and gave it to him, and he spent like 2 days at this school just hanging out with the kids and teaching them how to do comics and sketch and draw and stuff on his own dime.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome.
And there's like three letters in the back of this Batman issue just thanking him from parents and teachers.
Hell yeah.
It was awesome.
Because he probably like opened these kids' like eyes, you know, like that was something they would really be interested in.
And like when I get those Silver Age books, I always look at the letters pages and see if anybody from my state wrote in and see if I know them.
That's what Chris did. And yeah, he actually... He tracked that person down. Like a stalker.
That's a Magnum PI shit right there.
He's like, are you the guy that wrote into the Dial H for Hero Contest or something?
1962. Maybe.
The doorbell rings and I'm just standing there with a comic book flipped open to the letter page and a weird look on my face.
Like Jay and Silent Bob at the end of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back when they go after everybody on the internet. They
yeah.
just show people's houses ringing the doorbell.
Punching them.
Just beating the hell out of them.
I just saw Mallrats again, like, and I think it's funny as hell. I really do.
I like all the... Would you like another chocolate pretzel?
I love that. Whole dating scene is just hilarious. And everything that Silent Bob does is great. Like when he thinks he uses the force and that guy who can't see the picture frame he starts kicking stuff and he like uses the Jedi mind trick to lift up the videotape of Ben Affleck fucking some young girl. It's crazy.
That the commentary and like special features on that, some of them were interesting that I've ever heard, because it's just like all the stuff that they went through making that movie, like the funding that he got and what the studio was looking for and how they were trying to make like a 80s John Hughes type of movie and stuff, and like all the hurdles and problems that they had. It was like really fascinating.
Do you have like movies that like, I don't know, it's like when you saw them originally, you thought it was okay, but the more you watch it, like the more you like it. That's like Mallrats for me. The other one is the I can't remember the movie title, but it's like these guys are fascinated with Neil Diamond, Saving Silverman or something.
Oh, Saving Silverman's hysterical.
I like when I saw that first, I was like, yeah, I like it. But then I've seen it like 10 times already, and it's like the more I watch it, the more I like it.
When The gym teacher is the guy from the drill sergeant from Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's taking poops on the front lawn. Poop on the.
And the Jack Black, he's really good in that.
And what was?
They tie up her name. God,
Amanda Pete.
And she's pretty badass at kicking ass. She beats the shit out of him.
She make you get butt implants? And he's driving on his little Vespa scooter that she bought him because she won't let him drive.
Man, I saw that movie and I don't remember it at all.
You need to see it more. If you see it,
in all seriousness, if you like stupid comedies, man, that thing was funny as hell. It really was. Like it made.
Yeah, and I remember thinking it was funny.
And we all have that friend whose wife or girlfriend won't let him do shit. You know what I mean? And it's like that, but it's amped up to like 1,000, you know? Like, you're thinking to yourself, she would make a great Nazi. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she controls every movement, this guy. So, it is a good movie. It was underrated.
Yeah. You know? Plus, if you like Neil Diamond, it's a plus. And I do. I'm a big fan of Neil Diamond, so. I saw The Jazz Singer, and I really liked it. So did you get to read any comics, Chris?
Beside the Kirby stuff, I read a couple more issues of Infinity Gauntlet. That was the extent of my contribution this time. I can talk about those if you like.
Sure.
Let's see. So this is issues 3 and 4. Of 6 here, and last time we had the heroes getting amassed on Earth. Adam Warlock is getting people together to go up against Thanos, who has the Infinity Gauntlet. And issue 2 had a lot of like kind of a survey of all the damage that was being caused, and we saw different heroes trying to fight off earthquakes and not, you know, save people from them and stuff. And if that's not bad enough, we find out at the beginning of issue 3 that the Earth has actually been knocked off of its orbit, so it's drifting farther away from the sun as time goes on. I made a note of the fact that also that Hulk didn't want to join. I thought there's little, like, so overall the series, you know, has a sense of timelessness about it, but it's interesting how there are little bits here and there that tie it to a particular time in Marvel Comics history. And one of those was that Hulk doesn't want to join the heroes because of the way that he's been treated by the Avengers. And he's talking about how he was a founding member, and so he's just kind of like, there's a portal open available for him to transport to Avengers Mansion, but he's just kind of sitting there pouting, and he waits till Captain America says that they're willing to discuss him getting back into the Avengers if he'll help out, and that they'll work out the details later. So, you know, like the entire universe. Versus being threatened, and Hulk's holding out for Avengers membership,
but holding out for a better contract.
Yeah.
What was Hulk's frame of mind in that? Was he like Banner, like smart, or was he?
Yeah. So like that's kind of the context that Captain America allows it under, is that you know, he says, well, you've actually gotten yourself under control lately, so we'll consider it, you know. So I guess I don't know if he was merged or what the exact status of it was, but he was at a place where he had a control of himself, and he wasn't, you know, this crazy monster. The other thing that kind of stands out as being of a specific time is that Thor at the time was actually Eric Masterson.
Oh yeah, I actually like that Eric Masterson Thor.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny because when So Adam Warlock was at Doctor Strange's mansion with Doctor Doom and Silver Surfer, and he teleports them into Avengers Mansion. And as soon as they show up, you know, Thor immediately goes on the defensive and raises his hammer. He's about to strike at Adam Warlock, and Adam Warlock says something like, "You know, such and such, such and such." Thor, if that's really who you are, you know, knowing that it's actually Eric Masterson, and earlier in the issue, you know, you had a thought bubble where he's kind of concerned about, you know, the fact that he's, you know, not the Thor that people think he is.
Thunderstrike, Eric Masterson? Is that who became Thunderstrike later?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. No. All right. I was trying to figure. I knew that name sounded familiar, but I didn't read Thor unless.
Because Thunderstrike was the, wasn't he the construction worker that had the daughter? I think.
Yeah, it sounds right.
Yeah.
Because he took over for Thor when Thor had that curse where his bones were brittle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I never read that stuff. I read a back issue magazine article about Thunderstrike and stuff.
That magazine is evil, man. It cost me a fortune. The magazine's not expensive, but man, it turns you on to some stuff.
Yeah, I read that article, I remember, and then next thing you know, I was online looking at prices of Thunderstrike issues, and then I had to stop myself from thinking, did I ever think that I would be sitting here looking up prices on Thunderstrike issues in my life?
No, you could go to any con and get that stuff for like 50 cents or a quarter.
Yeah, sure. But, so that's actually kind of good foreshadowing for later in the issue, or actually maybe the next issue with Thor there, that they kind of make sure that the reader, you know, knows that situation. But, you know, meanwhile, we got the Earth heroes together and everything, and then Adam Warlock is, takes off to try to also unite a bunch of the cosmic beings, you know, everybody from a Watcher to Eternity to Celestials to Galactus, and the Watcher, you know, just as to be expected, is just there to watch and excuses himself, even though Adam Warlock tries to get him to participate based on the, you know, the scale of the threat. And Eternity is just there to, like, present something to the Living Tribunal. But the main moment of this scene really is that everyone's joined, and Galactus is holding out, and Adam Warlock, you know, kind of talks smack to him, and Galactus just blasts him, trying to disintegrate him, and he shows up on top of Galactus's head like, I'm still up here. But he gets Galactus to join and sort of holds those people in reserve. But kind of made me laugh that after this meeting takes place, the Watcher shows up floating in space above Thanos's floating Grayskull mansion, basically, and it's kind of like, you know, he refused to participate, and then he basically just like blows their cover immediately, because Thanos takes it as a sign that, you know, something major is going to happen, because the Watcher's there to see what's going on, and you know, he pretty much rightly assumes that the that there's going to be an attack. A couple other interesting things from this issue is that Thanos, so, you know, his whole deal, what's interesting that's kind of at the heart of this whole story is, you know, Thanos wanting death to love him. And I didn't really remember this the first time I read it, but I find it amusing how much of the plot kind of goes back to that. And it's kind of a typical thing, like, you've seen people do, like, the person that you really want isn't interested, so you're going to get together with somebody else to try to make them jealous. And since Thanos has, power over all reality, he just makes his someone else. And so we get introduced to Taraxia, who basically, interestingly enough, like, the ideal woman that he creates is basically like female Thanos, which says some more interesting things about Thanos' psychology.
What is that character?
Taraxia. So she kind of looks like...
like Thanos?
Yeah, if you imagine like
a female Thanos. Except really skinny and female. I think I've seen her, but I don't remember her.
Yeah, at least in this depiction of her, she's smaller than Thanos, but she's still pretty ripped. Naturally, this doesn't work on death, doesn't really do anything, but the issue ends on a pretty nice down note where we get the Earth heroes all flying in to attack Thanos. They've Adam Warlock's cast a spell on them to so that they can breathe in space, and then he's holding himself and Silver Surfer back, the Surfer wants to get in the action and attack. It doesn't understand why he's being held back, and Warlock admits to him that the heroes are just a distraction, that there's no chance that they're going to survive, and he's making the hard decision basically to sacrifice them. So it's kind of ends on a down note there. Issue 4, I've always liked this cover. It's just, this is the one where it's outer space and it's just Thanos floating there, and he's saying, there's a word bubble saying, "Come and get me." So he's like laying down the smack on the cover of issue 4. And naturally, I mean, Thanos, he could just snap his fingers and make all the heroes disappear from existence. And but he has Mephisto at his ear still. And Mephisto, for whatever reason, stops him and suggests that, he even the score a little bit and show his metal, basically display it for death, and maybe once again, maybe death will finally be interested in him. And it's kind of neat that this issue is somewhat narrated by Star Fox, who's been left alive and is just sort of laying on the ground with no mouth.
Yeah, so we get Thanos' brother, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or half brother, or something like that.
He's a guy that can have any woman have sex with him.
Yeah. Well, yeah, what was his powers? He was able to manipulate the pleasure senses in your brain, or something like that. So you'll essentially listen to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
he's also known as Eros, isn't
right,
he?
Right. Yeah.
Which we all know, Eros comics is porn comics, so.
that means love, right?
Yeah.
Unless it's in comic form. Yeah.
Right. Then it's porn.
Yeah. And backwards it spells sore, so I don't know what that. So I like that the Thanos, what he decides to do, he keeps the power of the Infinity Gauntlet in terms of physical power and stuff like that, but he cuts himself off from his omniscience, so he can be surprised, so that allows him, allows like Hulk to sneak up on him or whatever. And I like that he specifically states that this allows them a 0.05% chance of victory. So he's he's got that worked out to the percentage point.
Yeah, so he did the math.
Yeah. And basically we just get entertained as Thanos slaughters the superheroes from Earth. Wolverine manages to get the jump on him and impale him with his claws, but and I don't know if this is one of the first occurrences of something like this happened, but I feel like it's happened to him a million times since. He turns his adamantium to rubber.
I know Magneto took all the adamantium out of him.
Yeah, I guess people just, you know, at times one of the, you know, to show Wolverine really get messed up.
That means that his bones would, like, just collapse. Well, no, he still got his... Did he turn the whole bone to rubber or just the adamantium?
It looks like the whole bone, I guess, because he just collapsed in a heap.
A puddle of...
Yeah, just like a mess.
He has nothing to support the skin.
Mm-hmm. So, he might be dead, like, as dead as Wolverine gets at that point, because he, he goes on to, you know, rip the circuits out of Vision, Cloak, and I winced when this happened, because you know this is not going to go well. Cloak, of Cloak and Dagger, actually tries to... trap Thanos inside of himself.
I wouldn't do that.
Like, I know, you know.
that's a bad idea.
And as suspected, Thanos escapes, you know, by basically obliterating Cloak. Like, you just see little flecks of his blue cloak floating in the background after it happens. He kills Cyclops by creating a box around his head that he can't shoot his beams out of, and also suffocates him. And then he lets Taraxia, his female double that he created, loose, and she takes out Iron Man off panel and then just like shows up holding his decapitated head. And you see her on top of another moment I winced was when all of a sudden you see from off panel Spider-Man's webs come in and cover Thanos' face. You know, that's not going to go well. And Taraxia grabs him, and she basically, you see him, see her on top of him in the background, and then she, there's just a close-up of this rock that she was holding covered with blood. So it's pretty brutal. It gets down to the point where Captain America's the only one standing, and I mean, I like this page when this moment occurs, because one of the things I like, you know, give me a good moment with Captain America where you know, he stands up regardless of the circumstances, and that's basically what happens here. He stands his ground, and the artists do a good job of like flipping back and forth between panels where Thanos is raising the Infinity Gauntlet, and they show multiple views of Cap's face not flinching in the face of this, you know, soon to be like annihilated, basically. So this is the moment where Warlock tells Silver Surfer to go, and basically it turns out that their plan was, at this moment, Surfer tries to fly through and snatch the Infinity Gauntlet off of Thanos' hand as it's upraised to take out Cap, but he misses. And so this is basically at this moment, this is where Plan B comes into play, and Warlock remarks that this is not what he was hoping to have to do, that it's going to, because the result of the battle is going to be catastrophic, but he calls in the cosmic here, the cosmic beings, and our final page is... you know, Thanos looking up at a sky full of Galactus and you know, Eternity and Celestials and Lord or Order and Chaos, etc. And that's how this issue ends. One other quick thing was just that I thought it was kind of funny that to add insult to injury, when all that the battle with the heroes is over with, and you have like Cyclops and Iron Man and Spider-Man all laying there dead, and the ground around them is all broken up from the battle and stuff. Thanos has had enough of it when Surfer tries to steal his gauntlet, so he, you know, he reactivates his full powers and then just snaps his fingers to smooth out the ground and wink all the heroes out of existence to like basically clean up after clean up the mess. So not only does he like slaughter all these heroes, he just you know, makes their corpses disappear with the snap of his fingers. And that's Infinity Gauntlet 3 and 4.
That's some good stuff.
Pretty epic.
I don't remember any of it, though, tell you the truth. I read it back in the day, but I don't remember a lot of it.
Yeah, stuff's coming back to me as I read it, but I wouldn't have been able to tell you much of it beforehand.
The most I remember about that is all the spinoffs that they had afterwards.
Mm.
Infinity War and Infinity Crusade.
Crusade, yeah.
And then there was Warlock and the... What was the...
Warlock and the Infinity Watch, Warlock Chronicles. He had like two series come out of it.
Did you read that stuff, Donnie, or...
I read the miniseries. I don't remember. Maybe a scattered issue of Warlock here and there. I don't know. It was like, cosmic stuff used to just turn me off. Like I would just stay away from it as much. Yeah. But the Infinity Gauntlet. What actually brought me to that was George Perez. That's what brought me to that miniseries. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I was like, and then it just, it like, you know, like you described, it just went batshit crazy, you know, where Thanos could do anything. So you were like, well, what's he going to do now? You know, what's he going to do now? And I remember those, I don't know, is it in the last issue or the one where Captain America kept appearing? Like he kept trying to blink him out of existence and he kept coming back.
Maybe, yeah.
Oh, my God. Did I just spoil the whole series right there?
Yeah. Damn it.
I don't need to read the rest. Actually, you've read it before, though, right?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. The reason I ask about it, because I am curious about all the stuff that you mentioned that follow this up, because I don't know. I mean, I stopped reading Marvel not long after this ended, but... You know, when I stopped reading Marvel, I mean, that was close to when I stopped reading comics. I, you know, held on to some Image stuff for a little while, but, and then, you know, all that stuff was kind of out of vogue again by the time I started reading comics again. So, yeah, I'm like aware of all the spinoffs, but I never read any of them.
You know what I never read back in the day, and now I'm trying to get as much as I can. Is a buddy of mine was moving, and he said, "You like comics? Take this box." And so I went through it, and there was a lot of 90s, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of 90s stuff in there. But Stormwatch? I've never read Stormwatch, ever.
Mm-hmm.
I tried it in the New 52, and I liked it, but I really didn't know who half these people were, you know? And my friend had issues 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And so now I've been bothering Daryl Taylor. I'm like, because I know he used to read it, and all that stuff is just sitting in his basement, and just like out of order, and I want to absorb it all because I get like you, Mike. Once I find something, I get all like
you get a compulsion, you need to keep the trail moving.
And so I'm like, what trades of this do you have? Are they in order? What issues do you have? And his response, I don't know, leave me alone, shut up. So I'm trying
that's
to
Daryl. Get in. I saw pictures of you at his house going through the boxes.
Oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, here's two comic boxes upstairs, whatever you want. I don't want it in my house anymore.
He's totally likes the digital. I think
he's trying to get rid of everything. And I told him, I said, because... I used to sell a lot of comics at like little comic shows and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a ginormous collection, and I wound up selling half of it to this guy who gave me a really good price. And that's what he does for a living on the side. So he'll keep the stuff for his own collection, then he sells everything else, like, so it's an investment for him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I told him, I said, dude, come over to my house with all these bins. We'll put everything in order. And then we'll call the guy and have him come to the house and go through everything. And you'll get some. You want to get rid of it anyway. You might as well get a price for it. You
right,
know, something.
Right.
And he's just, yeah. And when I went over his house, everything's still in bins in his basement. Nothing's even been touched. And so I was just like, whatever. So I sent him a list of comics that I want and issues that I want. And every day I sent him a message on Facebook going, how far did you go along? Did you get in that list of mine? Stop nagging me.
I'm going to start bugging him now. So he can start tweeting FML.
Because he really got me into... he gave me a lot of his Marvel Now stuff, like titles that I didn't really give a chance because, you know, I'm on a budget. I can't be buying all these damn books, you know?
Yeah, there's some good stuff there.
With that all new X-Men. Wow.
Yeah.
That is good. And yep. FF is really good.
I really like the campiness of FF. Like, it reminds me of that Ecstatic X. And it's same Allard, but it's the oddity of the team. Like, it's just... like She-Hulk and Medusa and Ant-Man, you know, and then that female rock star. I mean, what is the weirdest shit I've ever seen? And they were supposed to only be the FF for like 4 minutes.
Exactly.
And then that Fantastic Four voyage just got effed up. So
I'm not reading Fantastic Four because, well, I've been an on and off fan of Fantastic Four. Like I read Burn stuff, some Silver Age stuff. If I came across it, I'd read it, whatever. I never really followed the team. But even people that really, really are into the Fantastic Four are really split on the Fraction Fantastic Four. They took
a step backwards, like with the Fantastic Four. Like everything that Hickman did, it's like, wow, that didn't matter. But it's like actually the last decade or so, it's just a weird take. His take is just not catching my. I'm reading it because I'm reading it. In other words, if I had to drop a book, that'd be one to go first. But I'm not like FF is different because it's just odd. I mean, it's like no other book that's. It's like, why do they even exist? I know they're babysitters, but good Lord.
And you know what's so weird? It's like, you know, we put our books up every week, Mike. I gave a 5 out of 5 for, I forget what issue number it was, but it was just Wyatt Wingfoot and She-Hulk going out on a date.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Book was phenomenal. And you had like the little guys that had a crush on She-Hulk and they're trying to ruin her date.
I love that issue. That was great.
That was like one of the best. It was just so fun. And like a lot of stuff that we read now is just so damn dark.
Yeah.
And just to have a lighthearted book like that is a nice change of pace.
The Moloids. The floating head Moloid.
Yeah, Fraction seems to be really good at that kind of style. Like, you know, FF's really good. Hawkeye. Like, and then...
And Iron Fist. And then it's weird because... I even like what Fraction did with Iron Man, like for the most part, but I can't get into his Fantastic Four. I every time I go into it, it's like I can't give it more than a 3 out of 5, and that just means that like I'm enjoying it, but I don't feel it doesn't get my. I get excited about comics, like I get, and it's like most of the stuff I read is a 4 out of 5, or you know there's stuff that I say, oh, that was all right, but man, that. I just can't get into that series.
Well, I don't think it's the right way to approach changing things. Like, there's no real reason within continuity to take the characters backwards, and especially Johnny Storm in characterization. Like, even if you want to bring the character to that place, you know, they didn't even spend the time to have something occur or in his life or anything like that to explain it, unless it's forthcoming. But I think it's like too little, too late at this point because you've lost people that were following the, Hickman run, who were participating, and like it seemed like a lot of people were really excited about Johnny Storm's character development in particular. You know, and then to just kind of reset him. In such a way to his kind of base character from the 60s without any real explanation, to just make him like a doofus. I think just like you're gonna lose people real quick that way.
Where he was the king of the negative zone. I mean, he was a ruler.
Yeah, I mean, people want to at least like see that play out. Like, if you got to put the work in if you want to bring him back to a place where he is.
Yeah, at least have an impossible man fuck with his mind or something, and and then he becomes stupid. I don't know.
Yeah, or if something bad happened, or where he just kind of got to a point where he's sort of acting like his old self to hide his pain or whatever the case may be. You know, it's like if there's no reason, if you just like pick up an issue with a comic and there's no explanation, and then you keep reading and no explanation or no signs of an explanation are forthcoming.
Yeah.
You break that illusion of continuity and you piss people off that are following the character, you know?
Right. Well, I made it through the end of Legion Lost finally. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Cool.
I had just read the Great Darkness Saga and I thought it was awesome. And this was a little bit different. It was a lot of mind manipulation that was going on, because it's all of a sudden they're not in their world that they knew. They're in some other universe. And they kind of know how they got there, is that like Element Lad saved them, and by saving them they were ported to this other universe that they know nothing about. And then there's these entities. They're very much like the Borg, except quite not. The Borg will absorb you and you become part of their entity, whereas this, I think they're called the progeny. What they do is the opposite. They look at the universe, the whole, as one big entity, and they feel that if you're not, you're like a cancer cell if you're not like one of them. So they end up destroying you and consuming you. And one of the big cat, the last time we talked about this, I think I had mentioned that Saturn Girl had manipulated the minds of her teammates to think that things were okay, and her teammates showed back up, and then she the spell was broken, and then they all felt betrayed by her, and she denounced herself as leader, said screw that, and they're fighting the progeny again, and they're captured. The odds of them winning are slim to none. Wildfire does pretty badass. Like, he's in space just blowing shit up like you wouldn't believe. And Ultra Boy is doing good. But once they get on the ship and start attacking the Legionnaires, they're consumed, and the progeny doesn't kill them, which is really weird. But they take them to their leader, and you find out their leader is Element Lad. It's effed up. Element Lad became a god. And he he's lived billions and billions of years in this this other universe. And he is like God. Like, he's creating worlds. He's seeing worlds form. And he doesn't even remember the Legionnaires. Like, they're a fragment of his memory. It's like you existed for nanoseconds of my time, and I don't even know who you guys are anymore. And then they have to, defeat Element Lad, and they lose. They lose Monstrous, like, which I expected her to die because I didn't know much about Monstrous. I was like, who is she? And, why did they create her? And I thought maybe if anybody died, it would be her. Mm. But Saturn Girl fell out of love, it seems like, in this series with Lightning Lad. Or they call him something different in this book. I hate the name changes. It pisses me off. But
Livewire, wasn't it?
Livewire, yeah.
That didn't last, though, did it?
No. I don't know why they changed it. Like, Phantom Girl was like Apparition, and Umbra was Shadow Lass, and I don't know. There's a lot
they
of
just, stuff. Did they just try to modernize it, maybe?
Yeah. They did, and that was kind of okay. It's just hard to get used to if you're used to calling them by their old names.
Right.
But, they end up fighting Element Lad, and pretty much to a standstill. And Lightning Lad, Livewire, sacrifices himself so the rest of them can escape to their universe, and then it just ends. But it was really good. I liked it.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that, but you know, Legion Lost was the first thing I ever read of Legion, a version of the Legion, and yeah, now that you say it though, and it comes back like that, totally at the time blew my mind. Like, I just thought that I was like, man, this is really, really cool, the whole thing with Element Lad.
I was shocked, but it made sense when you think about his powers, you know? Like, if they were to grow.
Yeah.
It just,
yeah,
like,
it's awesome.
Man, it was weird. And then he started to think like a god. Like, they were no longer his friends. They were little insects. Little ants on his freaking universe. But it was pretty interesting. So my love of Legion is growing, and just like Donnie say, I'm still searching out more Legion books.
Now, Legion Lost is supposed to be like right up there, one of those minis or story arcs like the Great Darkness Saga. Right?
Yeah, that's why I read it. Like, I have one more hardcover of Legion, and then I have to get issues.
I would imagine that you like the Great Darkness Saga better, just because of Darkseid and the Kirby aspect of it.
Well, they didn't go ping ping ping. That pissed me off.
Well, it's the future.
It went tick tick tick. I'm like, what is wrong with this mother box?
It's the future mother box.
Come on, Keith Giffen, you can get this right. It was a good series. Even though Darkseid was in it for like, man, he was in, that was like 14 issues, I think, in that hardcover. And yeah, Darkseid was in it for maybe three.
Yeah, I was going to say two or three. I remember reading that story.
Yeah.
I never got into the Legion when I was a kid, but.
It's a soap opera, man.
When they relaunched it and Wade did it, that was, I think, the longest I ever followed the Legion, because I followed it all the way up until it became Supergirl in the Legion of Superheroes. And
yeah.
And I got to say, I did enjoy that run on it. But for the most part, like, I don't know, my shop when I was a kid, it was weird. Like, most people, it was the rivalry back in the day was like, either like Teen Titans or you liked X-Men, you know what I mean? Because they were the two top selling. And at my shop, it was like the Teen Titans versus the Legion. For some reason, and I'm like,
same company versus same.
Yeah, and I was a huge Teen Titans guy. I mean, that was my.
I was the same way, Donnie. I dip my toe in the Legion, but never could do it. And then with the New 52 came, and like even prior to the New 52, me and Keith started to really talk about it, and I started to like really like it. And then I said, well, man, I want to go back to the past and learn more about the Legion. And so now I'm exploring him a lot more.
Now you're hooked.
Now I'm hooked. And I'll start seek out, like, Legion Worlds, which is a four-issue miniseries, which I don't think they'll collect because it's only four issues. But I'm really curious to see what happens to these guys, because they just end up back in their universe. And they're shattered, man. I mean, they're...
Right.
They're devastated after this adventure.
Yeah, if you like that, like I said, that was... I just started reading those. I never had any interest in Legion prior to checking out Legion Lost and the Abnett Lanning series that followed it. And, you know, I just checked it out because it was getting such good reviews. And, you know, if you like the Legion Lost miniseries, you should also like the Abnett Lanning series. I mean, I followed it through the end, and then, you know, followed through the Wade reboot, and it's funny because I kind of went the opposite direction. You know, I got used to these characters with their new names, and then when the Wade reboot came, he pulled it all back to the old names, so I had to adjust in the reverse order. But you know, and I read all that stuff without ever having touched any of the old Legion stuff, but that's kind of what led me to interested in it. But
yeah, it's so convoluted though, man. It's like they that's why they have the Legion of Three Worlds to show that there's so many different versions of the Legion out there.
Yeah,
it's just bizarre. But I'm really enjoying it, and I have a lot of Superboy in the Legion that I picked up recently. Some guy like sold like boxes and boxes and to my comic shop, like he just wanted to get rid of his collection. And
oh shit,
my my comic shop guy is giving me like good deals, like a dollar an issue if I buy them in bulk or something like that.
Nice.
And I picked up a lot of Superboy and the Legion, and like one of the first ones I got has Mike Grell art, so I'm like all stoked to get into it because Mike Grell is like one of my favorite artists, and I'm gonna dip my toe into that probably next week. But I finished another hardcover, so I'm making my way. Like one of the reasons I started this show is start reading old stuff that I wasn't reading because of the new stuff, and now I'm reading all kinds of old stuff, and I find myself it's a good balance. Like I'll go through a day and I don't like want to touch the new stuff, you know? I just want to read the old stuff. And yesterday was one of those days where I was just like, man, I just want to keep reading old stuff. But Donnie had sent me some Adventure Comics, 471 and 473. These were like right after Adventure Comics stopped being like the dollar comic. They used to be a dollar comic, and it used to have like the JSA. It'd have a Wonder Woman. It'd have a Flash story, a Green Arrow. All kinds of
stories.
Awesome stories. Like
I look for those ones. I really, when I'm out like in a dollar bin or something and I see those, I grab those because there's a lot of comic for that dollar, boy.
Yeah. But this kind of followed up, and you can read the letters pages, and it's like there's fans that are like, I thought I was going to be pissed off because you took away the JSA from me. You took away my Wonder Woman. You took away everything. And they said they liked it, and I can see why they liked it because it is very good. I mean, they have Martin Pasco is doing the story for Plastic Man with Joe Staton art. And I had just picked up a ton of E-Mans, and he did E-Man as well. And on the other story, you have Steve Ditko art.
Nice.
It was like sweet. I mean, and I found that story I found the Plaz story like extremely entertaining, like because Woozy is always like fucking up shit. Like Plaz is always having to get him out, and he wants to become part of this, like it's like an FBI. I forget what it's called. It's like the NSA or something like that. Plaz is a member of it.
FBI. He's in the FBI, I think.
No, it's not FBI. It's like NBA or something like
that. He's part of the National Basketball Association. I guess that would make sense because he can make himself taller. Like, you know.
Yeah, he can, you know, score from one end of the court to the other, just stretch his arm out.
It's a different organization. I can't remember what the hell it is. But he's... I don't remember... No, this is a fictional group. Barb said there is an NSA. And I'm like...
Yeah, well, yeah, that's National Security Agency.
Some fictional group that he's part of that Woozy wants to become part of. And... But it's really cool. What's really cool about Plaz is the villains. If you're a fan of Dick Tracy, like you get this like brick face, and he's got an origin that he was doing like the how would you say the like linoleum brick, the thing that makes a house look like brick, but it's not brick.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And his origin, like his face, is all like effed up. Like it looks like bricks, and it gives his origin like somebody like messed him up. The guy used to make bricks was pissed off that he was taking business away from him, so he took this guy and his boss, and he like made this guy brick face, and then the other dude he cut off his arm, and it became one of those like what are those things you lay brick or you smooth the cement over the brick.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know.
You know what it's called? It's an instrument. And that's that guy's name because one of his arms was replaced by one of those.
Is it Trowel?
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that.
And it's just goofy as hell. So if you're a fan of Dick Tracy, like you would just love this. The only thing I didn't like is they kind of made Plaz a lot like Elongated Man, like more like a sleuth. When I find him more like he was a criminal, and yes, he'll save the day, but he's like a little more mischievous towards everything. And I didn't like him being more like Elongated Man, but it was funny, and the Staton art was awesome. But the Starman series is what I got sucked into. The first issue I thought I was all right. And then I this was like really good science fiction. Paul Levitz was the writer and creator. I guess he created this version of Starman, and Ditko was the penciler with Romeo Thangal. But it was hilarious. It had some scenes like where he's like saving this princess and the princess is falling in love with him, and I'm like, well, that's cool, you know, he's gonna have a love life with this princess. But it was his sister, and his sister's like falling in love with the brother, and I'm like, that's just jacked up. I mean, it's like, how can I keep my sister from wanting to love me? It's a weird love.
Tell her that you're her brother. Maybe that'll stop it. Maybe.
But he's got like two dudes that like hang out with him, and it's just an oddball story. But
That's the Prince Gavin.
Yeah.
Now, did he ever? Because I'm starting to read the Starman trades from the 90s. Did he ever show up in there?
Yeah.
Did he? Because there's the blue one.
I think the blue one plays a major part in it.
And I don't know where he came from. Was he created just in that series?
There's actually five versions. There's his father, right?
Right, yeah. I got past the first trade. I have the other.
His brother became the Starman, and then for a very short period, like one issue.
And he got killed.
Immediately.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jack turned. Reluctantly took the mantle. Like, he didn't want anything. He wanted to have his little pawn shop and, you know, his vintage store, and that was his what he got off on, and he didn't want to be no hero. But then later on they had the blue Starman. I think his first appearance was in first issue special. And then this Starman appeared in the 80s in Adventure Comics. And then there was another Starman in the 90s, if you remember, that was more like Alien and had a purple and yellow suit that happened around the time of Captain Atom. And, you know, Captain Atom had his own series and Blue Beetle, and then there was Starman. So there's been a lot of Starman legacy. And I think they touch up. I think, if I remember, it's been a long time since I read Starman. I read it when it was coming off the rack. And I think they touch on all of them. But the blue one is a major, major focus on the series.
Yeah, he was the one that was in the Justice League for a little while.
Right? Yeah.
Now, I actually read an issue of Plastic Man a little while ago from the 70s. And I don't remember what issue it was. But he was at a case, on a case where he had to go and follow these, like, people to a ski resort, and him and the girl and what was the name of his fat friend?
Wuzzy Winks.
Yeah, Wuzzy Winks. And they were following this dude, and then who they wind up fighting is the Dial H for Hero Kid, because he gets brainwashed or whatever, and he thinks that Plaz is a bad guy, and so. It was just so awesome, like two weird-ass characters just in the same book together and then fighting each other.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And I actually want to go back and find all those other books.
Mm-hmm.
But the one from the 70s picks up from Plastic Man 1966.
So yeah.
In 76, 10 years later, they do another 9-10 issues of the series from 1966.
Yes.
And so those issues got to be pricey.
Yeah, I have all those issues, and they are at least in, you know, the 20s and 30s, and those are not in mint. Do you know what I mean? They're
Right.
You have to get them in, like, very good.
I want to know if it's traded.
It might be in the archives, but anyway, those are expensive. Yeah. Those are like
I've been looking at a lot of showcases lately in thinking about picking them up. I mean, it's 500 pages a comic, and you could get them on eBay sometimes for like $3.
Yeah. You know? I don't know if they have a Plaz. If they do, let me know. I'd be interested in reading along with you, because I've always liked Plaz, and I think it's because of the way he visually looks. But my introduction to Plaz, like, was the cartoon.
Mine too.
I used to watch it every Saturday morning, and yep, like religiously, and
because they used to have him, and it was Plaz, and like
was it Tarzan, or was that a different one?
Blue. I remember. Was it?
No, it's the Tarzan Lone Ranger Adventure Hour. That was different.
What was the one with the dog? who had his head. He was so ugly. He had his head in a small doghouse.
Oh, I don't know what his name is, but I remember that character.
Hello.
Hello. Got disconnected there. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
I'm here.
Okay. I don't know what happened there. I don't know. Skype. I don't remember the that dog's name, but I thought it was before or after that Fang dog. I can't remember the one with the huge fang that would hang out of his mouth.
All right, let's see. We're gonna go there.
I think you can buy the DVDs of Plastic Man.
Plastic Man cartoon. There's its pilot on YouTube.
Well, there you go.
All right, here's the wiki.
I don't think it would stand up very well today, but I'd be interested to watch it.
Yeah, it just says that it was a short-lived Saturday morning cartoon series.
Yeah.
So I guess it wasn't on that long, huh?
I never read any of the Jack Cole stuff, like the old stuff, before DC acquired the property.
Well, I know that stuff is in not a showcase, but it's in that stuff's archived.
Archived?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. And those things now are like $65 a pop.
And they had another cool character called Lowbrow in this. This is freaking... The one thing I like about whoever's writing it is the dialect that he tries to put. Like, this one guy has a huge lisp.
Oh.
It's hilarious to read. It's like one of those that you have to read out loud to get the full effect. But I'm enjoying it, and I was kind of upset I didn't have 472 because there was a gap, and all these stories kind of end on a little bit of a cliffhanger. You know, they're short stories, and you kind of want to know what happens in the next issue.
Right.
And then the last issue, this is another of my Bronze Age fixations right now, is I just finished reading Creatures on the Loose with Manwolf, and it got me to pick up, I like got on eBay for like $20 the first appearance of Manwolf, which was an Amazing Spider-Man. It was the first and second appearance, and they weren't in that great shape. They were very good, but there were books that I really wanted to read, and I want to read, but I've also been on this Werewolf by Night kick, and holy shit, this is good shit. Like, this is like awesome Marvel stuff. But in the last issue, that weird organization that is in the 1%, they're like dealing with the 99 and the 1% back in the, what is this, 1973? This 1% group had captured Jack's stepfather, and they're torturing him to try to get Jack Russell. What a great name. And he moves away from his sister. His sister knows he's a werewolf. He moves away because he needs to get away for a while. He moves into this new apartment. It's like a hipster apartment. And he must have some money that he inherited. And they introduce you to this cool character called the Hangman. And he's like, you think he's a cool vigilante at first. Like, there's a mugger and he's a drug addict and he's trying to get this woman to give him money so he can go buy more drugs. And this Hangman takes a seeth, you know, like what are those called? The death carries. Is it a seeth or that little blade that has the curve in it?
Yeah.
Scythe.
Yeah. Scythe.
Yeah. Scythe.
Yeah, scythe. Yeah.
He basically has a rope and a scythe, and he basically sticks this scythe in this drug addict's back right in front of the girl. And the girl's horrified. And he's like, you know, I protected you, and I punished the guilty and protect the innocent. But then he takes the girl with him, and I found that was really bizarre. He took the girl with him, and he puts her in a dungeon. And he's got, like, all kinds of girls in there that he thinks he's protecting, and he's got them imprisoned from society. So nobody will be there. It's so creepy. It's, like, creepy. And then Jack moves into this house, and he says, "I'm going to make my way to the beach because the full moon's coming out, and maybe there won't be anybody at the beach. Bad idea." But he's going out, and there's these two chicks, and they like talk really loud, and they see him, and they said, "Sandy wasn't putting us on. He clearly is gorgeous." You know, they're like talking to him. And then this one girl says, "We just wanted you to know that we've just decided we both want you." So they want to have a menage a trois with Jack Russell.
Hey, now.
But somehow he gets away and ends up on the beach, and a bunch of dudes just want to kick his ass because he's on the beach. And they don't think that he's a werewolf. They're like, "This dressed up motherfucker's on our beach. We want to beat the shit out of him." And he's starting to lose control and, you know, take those dudes out. And the hangman's giving his origin, which is fucked up. I mean, it's just one of those origins to laugh at. But all in all, the werewolf gets away from those beach dudes and ends up on the street trying to go back near his apartment, runs into his sister and I guess her mentor. There's this older dude that hangs out with his sister. I don't know what that story is. And hangman finds him thinking he's attacking the girl. I guess he's going to imprison his sister now. But the werewolf by night, just they get into this fight, and then at the end of the issue he hangs him, and it just leaves you on a cliffhanger. But man, I am hooked on this. I think I'm getting hooked in the Marvel like Bronze Age horror books. Like I want to seek more out.
Well, they like, if you want to find those cheap, and I think the black and white would look good. They do have essentials for all that stuff. Werewolf by Night, they have like two volumes. They have Marvel, I think it's just called Marvel Horror. And it's got like Brother Voodoo. And
yeah, I have the Marvel Horror. And I bought like Tales of the Zombie. I read that one essentially, the essential of that, like page to page. That was from the magazine, the Marvel Horror.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really good. These ones, I think I want to go for the color versions. It's just that they're kind of expensive. But I did pick up the first appearance of the Moon Knight and the second appearance of the Moon Knight.
Do they have those in a Masterworks, maybe? Let me look it up.
Werewolf by Night? If they do, it's one of those hard to find. But I have about 45 issues of Werewolf by Night now because of that guy selling his collection. Some of them I got not so much cheap. I didn't get these ones like they're in great condition, but I got them more like at $6 a pop. So it was good because they're usually like 20 or 30 in Overstreet, but it was well. I'm happy with my purchase. They're good books, and they look really nice, and the pages smell so damn good.
Yeah, it doesn't look like they have any of their horror stuff in a Marvel Masterworks.
And I almost went for the Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu's, because I could get a good run of that. But, man, I just getting out of control there for a while, so I had to, like...
You pulled yourself back in?
Yeah, I was like, yeah. I'm going to stay married and...
Yeah. I'm going to stay married and happy.
Yeah, Shang-Chi's not worth it.
Yeah.
So
Shang-Chi is pretty good, though.
Yeah, it is good.
I've never read Shang-Chi, so I'm happy to, like, I may have read him in other, like, not his own title, but him showing up in other books. Well, like, now he's an Avenger, but...
That's the weirdest thing ever to me. I mean, growing up reading Marvel, like, you know, it's just like, that's like one of the... I don't know what it was, but they're just pulling characters now to be Avengers that back in the day you would have never if you told 8-year-old Donnie that the Master of Kung Fu was going to be an Avenger, I would have just laughed at you, you know, or Power Man and Iron Fist were going to be Avengers. I would have laughed at you.
Or Daredevil.
Or Daredevil. And
Daredevil is really weird because I have always thought of him as a solo dude, like doing his own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, they used him for a couple of arcs, and then they didn't. You know, he's out of it now. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it was just
Spider-Man was a weird. mm-hmm. thing, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
I remember seeing those covers, like, in the Avengers, and I think in the 80s, that would have, like, okay, it's roster time. Who's going to be an Avenger? Yep. And then they put, like, a 9x9 panel in the front. And, you know, have all the figures, and Spider-Man would always be there, and Luke Cage always. Would be there. And you're like, they're not going to pick any of these people. And then they'd pick Dr. Druid, and I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, that's even worse. But some of them, if written well, they do pan out fairly well.
Yeah, it's like, I remember that. That was, like, a real big deal, man. Like when Spider-Man, whenever they asked Spider-Man to join the group,
yeah,
and you were like, what? And I remember that one, was it a two-parter or whatever, where they show him in the Avengers mansion, and he just made like a hammock out of his webs, and he's just hanging from a chandelier. And they're like, you make $1,100 a week?
He's like, I want
that. Was the only reason he wanted to be an Avenger back in the day. Was like, I am broke.
That's why he shows up in the Baxter building in Amazing Spider-Man number one or whatever.
Right. He's always about the money.
It's about the money. He's like, I'm broke. Aunt May's suffering. I need to get her meds. Come on. Sign me up.
Aunt May.
Yep.
Yeah, there was a... It was a big deal if he was. I remember because I was a big Spider-Man fan when I was a kid, and I remember buying a whole storyline of Avengers because Spider-Man was on, you know, was teaming up with them. But it was something, you know, it was a big deal. Like they advertised it on the cover of each issue that he was in the story, you know, guest starring. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
And I kind of, I don't know. I mean, it gets to a point where if everybody's an Avenger, it doesn't really mean anything to be one, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like kind of...
Even now, Hickman's got, like, Cannonball and Sunspot, and there's a lot of weird characters in there.
Well, yeah. Now with the Uncanny Avengers, too, you got Sunfire and Rogue, yeah. And it's like, now it's, you're better. I bet it's a harder thing to try and find someone who's not an Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
In some capacity, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I understand from a business perspective why they're doing it, but, you know, it kind of, after a while, you know, if everybody's an Avenger and most of the X-Men are Avengers, then it kind of starts to lose a little bit of, like I said, I'm kind of repeating myself, but it's just, when I was a kid... Same thing you're talking about. Like I always liked those Avengers issues where they would recruit the team, and I liked that there were certain characters that were sort of just like it added this. It was part of their characterization that they wouldn't be the type of person to be considered
a team player. Yeah,
yeah. And as soon as you know, like I understand what Bendis was going for by pulling in. It's like you look back at the Justice League, and that's like. The idea of it is that the most popular heroes are on the team.
Right. Yeah, but well, then if you look at the Avengers, though, like the ones that Donnie was talking about, imagine if you're the internet's back then and you're like Thor, you know, Ant-Man, Wasp, Iron Man, and Cap. And then all of a sudden you're... You know, Scarlet Witch.
Oh, yeah, you're just four of you.
Yeah, Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, and who else was on the team? Oh, Hawkeye.
Hawkeye,
and yeah. Goliath, right? Hank Pym was still around.
No, he left, too.
Oh, did he leave?
Like, when it was just the second wave of team for the Avengers, it was just Cap was the only one that stayed, and then they got Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, and Hawkeye, and then that was it. For like a good 10 issues, I think. And then Wasp and Goliath came back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a weird team, too. So it's like it's always been happening. I always remember the cover of, like, I was reading Black Lightning at the time. And there was a time when, like, the Justice League, like, Superman and Batman are there. And they're like, Black Lightning, we want you to be in the Justice League. And he's like, no. He's like, waves his hand. You jive turkeys. I don't want to be with you guys.
Yeah, I have that issue, too. I have that issue with Justice League. He's like, because there's like a group of weird people behind him. And he's like, I don't need you jive turkeys. I'm with these guys. And I was like, As soon as I saw that, I wanted to read that issue immediately.
Yeah. And it was kind of cool how Batman said fuck it later on and built his own team. Like, he, you know, put the Outsiders together.
Oh, and that cover was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
With the Justice League on one side looking all shocked, and then the Outsiders on the other. And he's like, I don't need a Justice League. I quit. I'm with these guys now. And as a kid, you were like, holy shit, who are these guys? You know,
these guys? It's like Halo.
And they were all people I've never heard of.
First, yeah. That was Katana.
Yeah, because like it was kind of cool because they took like characters they had no room for and didn't know what to do with, like Metamorpho and Black Lightning. And then, you know, then they created three more characters.
Yeah.
And he had a go. You remember why he formed the Outsiders?
I thought they had a fight, like something happened, and I don't remember who
involved. Lucius Fox was captured in Prince Baron's country.
Uh-huh.
And so Batman was, he said, well, you know, it was a war-torn country, so he's like, well, I need some help. So he goes to the Justice League and tells them, and they're like, yeah, we can't really get involved with that. It's a diplomatic situation. And he was like, well, my best friend's down there. And they're like, no, well, sorry. You know, rules are rules, you know?
Yeah.
And so Batman was like, the hell with you guys. Then I quit. And he goes on his own. And then that's when, Geo-Force was being creative.
Yeah.
Because they were trying to create a superhuman to stop that Baron guy who was tearing apart the country. And like Halo, for some reason, was just unconscious in a foreign country. And she didn't remember where she was. And Black Lightning was there. And I remember when he turned up, put on his costume. And I was like, really? His mask is attached to an Afro wig?
That was the most unusual. Like, but it was genius. Because who would think, you know, how did that guy cut his hair so damn fast? It can't be the same guy.
Right. Yeah.
The Afro wig.
That's true. Cool. Yeah.
Fun, man. I know, like, I think the first 20 issues of Batman the Outsiders, there's a showcase for that too.
Yeah,
you find that thing for like $5 at a con, so you get like 20 issues of comics for like $5.
Yeah, man, I have fun that stuff, and man. Then they had their own series for a while that went Baxter paper, the Outsiders.
Yep. Yeah, they left Gotham and went to Hollywood.
Yeah, the Looker came in.
Yep. And then they I'm trying to find all the issues from like the 90s when the Baxter run, because the Baxter run didn't last long, I don't think.
It didn't. I think it was 20 some issues.
And then they were gone for a little while. And then in the 90s, they came back and they had this weird 90s ish team.
Oh, you know? That was where they had Faust and the guy with the armor.
And was it the Eradicator part of the team?
The Eradicator's part of the team. But it did have a fairly good run, Donnie. It's 28 issues.
I'm trying to find
that Outsiders. It like ended when
the one in 85, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it did have, it was 28 issues. And a special and an annual. So it had 30 issues to it. I'm actually getting those in the back issue bins too when I go to cons. I look for those because you could pretty much find those for like 50 cents or a buck, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm looking for the other one.
Oh, it was Halo, The Looker, Katana, Felix Faust, Wildy, he was like a werewolf-like looking dude, Geo-Force, and Technocrat, and the Eradicator.
What year was that, Mike, you know?
That year was 1993.
Because I'm looking for it on Comic Book DB, and they have every other era except for that one. Weird.
Yeah, it was Paul Pelletier who did the art with Mike W. Barr. Mike W. Barr did almost like all the Outsider stuff.
Yeah, I think that was the, because they didn't come back again after that, I think, right, till 2009 when they did the Arsenal Nightwing team.
Yeah, yeah. That was 2003, yeah.
2003. So what was 2009? Oh, that was the one. that continued from the Batman and the Outsiders reboot, right?
Yeah. That's the one that I kind of, it got shat on because Dan DiDio came to the end of the run, but they had like Keith Giffen art. It looked like very Kirby-esque, man.
I remember reading that.
It blew my fucking mind, man.
I didn't know what the hell like was going on. Like towards the end, because they were just throwing people in there. Like Dan DiDio was just like throwing all these, like, what was his name from Guardians of the Galaxy? Not Guardians of the Galaxy, Global Guardians or Guardians of the Globe?
Yeah, Guardians of the Globe.
The Olympian?
Yeah.
Him? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden he showed up and he's just kicking people's ass. And then there was like a bunch of characters from the 90s Outsiders that he threw in there that just happened to be hanging out, you know? And I didn't know who they were because I never read that run because, you know, like Chris, there was a time where I was out of comics for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
I remember back in the 90s, the early 90s, I was more into Marvel books. I was huge into X-Men. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
I spent a lot of my budget on the X books, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the Team Jacket Avengers era.
Yeah, I think the Nightwing Outsiders ran for like 50 issues or so, and then didn't Batman kind of come in and take it over? It's like,
yeah, yeah.
And then, thought you were doing your own thing, son. But the Outsiders are my team.
Yeah, because they restarted it. Who the hell was in that team? I remember that, like, the first issue. The ghosts of Ralph and Sue Dibny were in it. And I was like, that's weird.
That is weird.
It was like Catwoman, Martian Manhunter, Batman, the ghosts of Ralph and Sue Dibny. I'm trying to think of who else was on the team.
What was that one for?
That was the one when Batman and the Outsiders came
back?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that and one then, became the Outsiders after a while.
After 14, yeah, after issue 14. Then the last issue was issue 40, and it was Batman and the Outsiders again. Maybe it'll be on the cover art. Who's there? Yeah, let me see. Here we go. It was Batman, Martian Manhunter, Metamorpho, Katana, Catwoman, Lightning?
Was it Thunder? Yeah, Thunder and Grace, maybe. Or maybe no, it's Lightning.
Lightning
and Grace.
And then the ghosts of Ralph and Sue Dibny were doing stuff, too. I remember that because it scared me.
Ralph and Sue didn't stay around long, though.
No, it was only like a couple of issues.
Yeah.
And then that's when they brought in the OMAX.
Yeah. OMAX-tivate!
And wasn't Man-Bat and his wife, they were kind of part of the team, but on the scientific level.
Yeah.
That was some. See, that's another one. Like when I talk about, we were talking about unusual teams.
Mm-hmm.
The Outsiders was always a group of just like weird, you know, weird people that got together. That's why I like the Justice League Bwahaha era too. You know what I mean? Like you never would mm-hmm. think that these people would.
It was a shock to me, but it grew on me, and it was a shock to me because of. It turned more into a personal book than, like, what are we fighting this week?
Right,
like,
yeah.
It was more like a buddy book, and it was very unusual. But after, like, 5 issues, I fell in love with it. You know what I mean? I was like, this is different. This is really different.
And it was the first time for me, it was the most realistic comic for me in a sense because – they were breaking each other's balls and you know what I mean? Like having a good, like you and your friends get together and you break each other's stones and you have a good time, whatever. And I never saw that in a superhero book.
Yeah. I never saw it in comics.
And when they did that, that made me fall in love with this like right away. And then, you know, it was kind of like real life in a sense where nothing ever went right for them either.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, even though it was done in a comedic way, but I mean, you know, if you read like the Satellite era, yeah, they fight these threats, but
Well, they fought each other, man. Hawkman and Green Arrow hated each other.
They sure did.
Those fuckers, man. So it really did. Like, Brad Meltzer did a good job of taking that satellite area and making it, you know, Identity Crisis. Like, because he kept so much of the characters intact.
I'll tell you, that's when I started getting back into comics, like really getting back into comics. Like, I had stopped reading, and I would buy issues here and there, or maybe a run or a miniseries here and there. But, I mean, when I started getting back into comics is when I got divorced from my first wife. And, like, most guys will probably, when they get divorced, they go to the nudie bar or the hookers or something. And Donnie was in the comic shop going, "What is this?"
What is this book?
And so
I cried when I read Identity Crisis.
So did I.
I was in tears. Like, I was bawling. There was like three issues, I think, especially the elongated man thing.
Oh my God.
I mean, she comes home and she's like, "I was pregnant." You know, he finds out she's pregnant. Oh my God. And they've been trying to have a kid forever and she's dead.
Oh my God. Yes. And I was just ball, like, that issue when she died and he was on the phone with her.
Oh my God.
I was crying like a little girl. I'm going to admit it right here.
Oh, I had tears running down my face and I was about to go like breathe hard. Like,
and then when he was at the funeral,
oh, and shit.
Like, he couldn't compose himself. So his face was turning all plasticky and shit.
Yeah.
And he was just tear streaming and all the heroes were there.
It was
and
so then heartbreaking though, because they even set it up, Donnie, like, yep. he was there on the rooftop talking to Firehawk and he's like, saying how much he loves his wife and how every year she tries to surprise him on his birthday and he always pretends it doesn't work. Nope. And he's like talking about the past of all the different instances. And then that happens and it's like, oh my God.
And the one year she surprised him was because the surprise was she was pregnant and now she's dead.
Oh my God. How old is that book? How old is Identity Crisis?
It was early 2000s, I think. I'll look it up right now.
Damn, that was a good book.
Yeah, let me tell you, I was sold right there, man.
It, like, messed with so many emotions because you went from highs to lows, and then you have the scene where Deathstroke is taking out the entire Justice League.
That was badass. And I remember, like...
God!
Because I remember, like, when I left comics, he was a Teen Titans villain, and he was pretty badass. But, he wasn't this badass. You know what I mean? Like, he was just kicking the crap. When you kick the crap out of the entire Justice League and don't even break a sweat, I was like, awesome. Identity.
I found it. It was 2004.
Wow. I'm slow. I told you I type with two fingers. I wasn't lying. Yeah, 2004, and it had all the different variants.
Hey, man, you had a girlfriend.
I did.
You couldn't go to that typing class.
You know what's messed up is, like, you know, she went to another school, so I really could have took that typing class and no one would have been the wiser.
I didn't know, like, back in the day that was how you picked up chicks, go to typing class.
Hey, that's how you, because that's where they all, that's where a lot of them were. Why do you think there was, like, kids in like cooking classes?
Home ec?
In home ec, you would get guys that would take that because they would want to meet, because girls would think it was like an easy credit because, you know, whatever. So they would go there. And then, like, the burnouts were there because they wanted to learn how to make brownies so they could make pot brownies. But yeah, it was home ec and typing. That's where the chicks were back in the 80s in high school.
I had to take. We didn't have typing, but I had to take home ec.
I was forced to take home ec, too.
I was forced to take it in junior high, not high school.
Yeah.
That's where I was forced to take most of those types of... I took typing in junior high.
Yeah, we didn't have it in junior high. Typing. That was a big high school class there. The public education system of Connecticut. That was. What about typing? Nope, save it for high school.
Yeah, I had to take that and some other stuff like that, but you didn't have to. You had to take it, but you didn't have to pass it to advance to the next grade. So, you know, I was that kid who...
That's kind of counterproductive, isn't it? On the...
Yeah, because I like... So I was, you know, the one who, you know, just went ahead and failed the classes that I didn't have to pass, that I wasn't interested in. So I had to take home ec, but I didn't have to pass it, so I just... I just passed it. And to this day, I can't sew for shit.
I had sewed my shirt to the pillow. I remember when I was making a pillow and I stepped on the damn foot pedal too much and my whole shirt was sewed to the pillow.
Oh, I thought you were saying that like your faulty sewing skills led to you doing that later in life. Like, Mike, are you gonna get up for work? Just a minute, Barb, I need to cut these threads.
Whatever you do, don't let Mike sew your weave.
Yeah, that's right. I still can't sew to this day.
Oh, neither can I.
It's a damn shame, too, because that's something I want to do because it costs money. I can't buy pants. Like, I can't. I am a weird length, and I can't buy pants that are, like, 28 length or 27 length. I have to sew it.
Right.
Guaranteed. And it either costs a lot or I have to get Barb to do it and she'll wait months and whenever she gets to it. Because paying for it is like really high. It's expensive for somebody just to put a couple stitches across a pant leg and cut. Yeah, it's.
We actually have a dry cleaners in my town. It's an Asian dry cleaner, so stereotypes are alive and well in my town. And they'll hem a pair of pants for like $5.
Over where I, you know how much I was paying? $20.
Wow.
One pair of pants.
Wow. I don't even spend $20 on a pair of pants.
Yeah, that's when I was like, we got to get a sewing machine because you look at like, it costs like $20 to buy a pair of pants. And you're like, wow, I'm spending more to fix them? It doesn't make any sense.
Wow.
Well, we have one question from Amy of Rookie and the Geek. And it says, if a person new to comics was looking for an older series to read, what would you suggest? Maybe your top five of all time. This is a hard question like to answer anytime because you really got to know. You know what I'd give them? Identity Crisis. Because I gave my wife Identity Crisis and she like got sucked into the world of these characters, which maybe she knew about, I don't know, she probably knew about 20% of the characters.
So where, is this for superheroes or is this for...
She doesn't say, she says superheroes. I know she likes horror, so if I were her, I'd get into like at least a Tales from the Crypt from the, you know...
Oh, EC?
Yeah, an EC archive. And those are great to read, but you can't read them like one hardcover and then take a break because they're all that like O'Henry type.
It's just like creepy too. Yeah. If you get one of those hardcovers, the creepy and eerie hardcovers, you gotta read one and take it. But they're, I would say if she's into horror and stuff, Hack Slash is a fun series. That's probably about 10 years old.
Yeah, Hack Slash is about a serial killer that hunts serial killers.
Basically, yeah. 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 She's the daughter of a slasher. And then she teams up with this big, huge, deformed dude. And then they go around the country and hunt other slashers. So it's pretty cool. I mean, if you like Evil Dead, there's all the Ash comics from Dynamite. Those are fun.
Yeah, Tales of the Zombies really good. That's that magazine. Marvel magazine reprints for horror are really good. I would even say Savage Sword of Conan if you're into fantasy.
Oh, and those you could get a lot of those cheap because they're putting out, basically they're like Essentials, Dark Horse, what do they call them? The Dark Horse versions?
Chronicles?
No, those are the ones that are like Masterworks. what the hell do they call them? Parents.
Archives?
Are they archives? I mean, but anyway, they're like a huge, huge phone book of Conan comics with gorgeous black and white art. And the thing that's beautiful about these is the art was originally in black and white. So, you know, that's how you looked at it in the 70s. That's how you're looking at it now, you know.
She said specifically superhero stuff, though, and that's the stuff I don't think she gets into. And, I have a hard time thinking of, like, superhero stuff, because especially for somebody who's new to comics, what do you think, Chris?
If somebody's totally new to comics and I think she was asking about, like, retro stuff, since this is, you know.
Yeah.
This, that podcast. you know, I guess, I mean, it makes me think of the classics, like, I think, and she said also stuff that's accessible, like, digitally or easy to find and trade. I know that the new Teen Titans, I know that that's all on, most of that's on Comixology, the George Perez, Marv Wolfman, Uncanny X-Men, like the Dark Phoenix, those are classics I think are pretty accessible. I always think Batman Year One is a good trade for people.
Yeah, any of the Batman stuff is pretty damn good. The Killing Joke I would read for sure.
I'd go with the Long Halloween.
Yeah.
It's 13 issues. It's in a nice thick trade or an absolute edition, if depending on what you want to do.
Really want to seek out individual issues, there's the Detective from Batman run that Alan Grant and Breyfogle did. I love that run.
Actually, a lot of the Paul Dini detective stuff is very good, too. A lot of one-and-done stories, maybe two-and-done stories, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The Laughing Fish that had a Detective by Engelhart, man, that's a good run. That's older stuff, though. But I think it's available. Like, that's a popular run.
I'm trying to think of other... It depends, too, like, how far back. Like, if you're into the history of stuff, like I've been talking this whole episode about showcases and essentials.
Yeah.
Where you could literally start at Avengers number one, you know, and go and keep going. And, you know, there's all those masterworks and archive editions. So it depends on really what you're
into. I do think, though, that, like, if you're going to do that, you have to be in the right frame of mind. Like,
sure.
You can't be reading, like, current comics and go back and not expect them to be like that.
Yeah.
Every decade is really different. Some of it's dated. Like, some of its stuff holds up. Like, you're saying your Infinity Gauntlet, you're liking it. Werewolf by Night is the shit. Like, if you go to Marvel Bronze Age Horror, I think you will find... Even romance comics, those are funny as hell. I mean, every time I find a romance comic, they're kind of hard to find for cheap. But when I find them, I literally laugh my ass off. And not only do I learn, like, laugh because it's funny, but I learn a little bit about the time period and how bad women were treated. Good Lord.
And I'm thinking, like, for Spider-Man stories, how about Kraven's Last Hunt? Do you think that would be...
Oh, that would be a great one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. DeMatteis and Mike Zeck art,
or the Death of Gwen Stacy.
Yep, there's a hardcover called The Death of the Stacys, and they actually have Captain Stacy's and Gwen's in there. So you get two deaths in one hardcover, same family. I mean,
it's a deal that can't be beat.
Superhero ones, though, it is kind of tough because
Howard the Duck is pretty freaking sophisticated stuff. I like it.
If you're into weird, though, yeah. I mean,
Howard the Duck and the Defenders. Oh man, I don't know. I'm a fan of Steve Gerber. Like, think he was a man ahead of his time.
That's kind of like stuff I would recommend only if I knew that their tastes were suited to it, you know.
Yeah. OMAC.
But, you know, and I think if somebody becomes interested in history, of comics, then they're probably in the right mindset. If they're you know, because when I was a kid, all I wanted to read was the new. I didn't care about the old, you know.
Right.
But then when I got back into comics, like around 2000 or so, that's where I really went to the essentials and stuff, because I got interested. Like, let me see, you know, especially the characters I liked as a kid, Spider-Man and the X-Men, you know, let me see what the origins of these characters is and where they came from, you know. And essentials were like the main way to do that at the time, because you didn't have as digital comics and stuff yet.
Oh, Starman. Starman would be a good place to go, I think. Like, for somebody who's not totally into superheroes, but you're trying to get in, I think Starman is very accessible, because it builds and builds and builds.
Yeah, there's a... I mean, it's hard to answer the question, because you don't know what the person's into. You know, I mean, like, we could just think of, like, old runs that we used to like when we were kids, or we're still enjoying. Like, you would probably say that the Great Darkness Saga.
Yeah, the Legion, you know, stuff, but...
That has a lot of continuity to it. Legion stuff, doesn't it?
Oh, hell yeah. Legion, though, man, it's hard to recommend to somebody that doesn't want to dip their toe in it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Ooh, Green Arrow, the Longbow Hunters. I think that's really good. The prestige format, and then the series by Mike Grell.
Mm-hmm.
Warlord, if you love fantasy, that's really good stuff.
Well, that's why, like, a lot of times I think, like, if someone's curious and they want to figure out what their tastes are, because they might not even know themselves if they're not really into superhero comics. Like, and I mean, the one method to go is what you're kind of doing, where you're connecting it to things that they're into in other formats.
Right.
The other way to go is just, like, sample some of the, you know, the series that are considered to be, like, all-time runs. You know, that's why I was, like, mentioning, like, Teen Titans, X-Men, stuff like that, where you try stuff out, sample it. If you're going to go the Comixology route, like, that gives you a way of, like, not even having to commit to a whole trade and spend, like, a couple bucks, see if you're grabbed by it and stuff, and start to, like, form a sense of what you enjoy as a reader, you know, to look at, like, what has stood up over the test of time. Things like, not really superheroes, but, like, obviously, like, Neil Gaiman's Sandman is something that, you know, has stood up, at least for certain people, considered to be a classic, not just, like, a flavor of the month kind of thing, or...
Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing, yeah.
Hellblazer. That might be a good one for Amy, because of just what I hear she likes.
Hellblazer. Yeah, that first trade, though, is rough.
Very first one?
Yeah, because I started reading it, and I am, like, I'm on the first issue still, and I started that thing, like, 2 months ago, and I put it down, and I would start reading something else, and then my DCBS shipment would come in, and I'd be like, all right, well, I'll get to it after this, and then the first trade is rough, but I've read Hellblazer stories that are, you know, like, the Ennis stuff is really good. And, But it just ended not too long ago, but I think a seminal Vertigo run is Jason Aaron's Scalped.
I was going to say that too. It's kind of not retro, but
but it's phenomenal. I mean, especially if you like a show like The Sopranos or The Wire or something like, to that effect.
Yeah.
I think you'd be into to Scalp, because you could see this being an HBO series in a New York minute, man.
Mm-hmm.
But
I want to read that someday.
If you're into like
Exterminators, that's good too. But all the Vertigo stuff you could point to. Fables got my wife reading monthly comics, but I think the thing about Fables is you kind of get sucked in after the first trade. The first trade's good, but...
It's good, but yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
You get sucked in, like, in 2 and 3 and 4, and then you're already vested, but...
Because that's when the big story, like, they start underlining the big story of the adversary and everything.
Yeah.
And you're like, who's this dude? And it's like, he's kicking the shit out of everybody? Like, what's going on? Like if you're into the original Star Wars movies too, Dark Horse released all those omnibi of the classic Marvel series, which are just that's just fun comics right there. If you like those characters, you know. Some Chaykin.
I love Chaykin.
You know, IDW released all the old G.I. Joe books too, if you're into the like those cartoons when you were a kid. Those are fun comics too. They get ridiculous towards the end, but they're fun. Because you could tell now it's just a 22-page advertisement for toys. And there's a point where you could pretty much find the point where Larry Hama just didn't give a shit anymore, and he's like, "Okay, I'll put this in," you know.
I think Daredevil is pretty consistent book. I always like every decade of it for the most part.
Yeah, as far as retro too, like Frank Miller's Daredevil stands up.
Yeah, but even the Bendis stuff is older than 10 years, isn't it?
Borderline, I think.
I would get like a Mutant Massacre from the X-Men too.
Oh, the Kevin Smith Daredevil? That's probably 10 years old.
Yeah, you know what? I went back and I reread that last year or something like that, and I liked it when it came out, but I found it like way over the top and like overly melodramatic. I didn't really like it the second time.
Yeah, I actually read it in hardcover, and because I was always trying to, I could never get into Daredevil, and I was trying to get into Daredevil, and I was just like, he's just blind Batman, and I just couldn't get past that.
And I don't see them like alike at all. Like
in all seriousness, Mark Waid's run that's out now is the run that made me like Daredevil. When that trade comes in my DCBS box, everything else goes to the side, man. And I read that sucker first. It's like that, any Valiant stuff, and Boom's Planet of the Apes is like the which is ending. But that series is another one. Like when that trade is in my box from DCBS, you better leave me alone. I might call in sick for work that day.
Planet of the Apes is good. I still haven't read the special. Like, you know how they're finishing the series like in one shots?
Yeah, actually they just solicited. It might be the last one.
Yeah, I think it was last month or this month.
And I bought them and I read them, but I know I'm going to wind up buying them in trade too, because I have the rest of the series all in trade.
That is a good series, man. That's a really good series.
Did you read the Hardman stuff yet?
No, I haven't gotten to that series yet. Well, I missed the first arc. I didn't buy into it. And then I bought the second arc, and I haven't started it yet.
Oh, so you should really... I think you'll enjoy it. To be honest with you, I do like the first series that Boom put out better. But I do it. Not saying that this is a bad. The Cataclysm is a bad series at all. It's good. It's just, you know. It's just you get to see a lot of the characters from the movies, like Dr. Seuss and Cornelius and all that. It's cool. And, of course, Hardman's art is gorgeous, as always.
Yeah.
Are you reading his Star Wars Legacy, too?
No. I'm just reading Star Wars.
That book is awesome.
And then some of the Vader minis.
Yeah, the Legacy book is pretty cool. It's like Han Solo and Leia's great-great-great-granddaughter or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, her Chewbacca is like... what do they call that race, the Admiral Ackbar?
Oh, man.
Mon calamari or something like that. Fried calamari or whatever it is. But she has, yeah. That's like her Chewbacca. He's like an engineer, which is kind of cool. And then she also hangs out with an assassin droid. Like, you remember IG-88 from... Empire Strikes Back, that big thin
Bounty Hunter, yeah.
Bounty Hunter guy. She hangs out with one of those dudes. And then she just recently met up with a what are they called? They're like I guess a Knight of the New Republic kind of thing. They're like the new Jedi, but they wear like all red and shit, like the Sith did back in the day. Like I don't know. They're not called Jedi Knights. They're called like Knights of the
Republic.
It's something like that. I can't remember. But she just met that dude, and it's pretty cool, man. She was just like a junkyard owner,
yeah,
on this planet, and.
I've always read some of those, and I have a hard time getting into the extended universe. But when it's like Star Wars proper, I get right into it. It's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure I can get into anything. if I read enough of it.
I know, like, the original Legacy.
Yeah.
It was written by, I think it was mostly Ostrander.
Ostrander, yeah.
So you can't go wrong there, man.
Love. Ooh, the Spectre. That's a good. The Ostrander Spectre would be a good book to dig out.
Suicide Squad, if you like.
Oh, hell yeah. That's one of my favorites. It's still one of my favorites. I like to do that. Secret Six, any of that stuff. I like the villains, so I know a lot of people are not going to like the Villains Month, but I like the villains so much that I'm really looking forward to it.
I love villains, and that's why I'm mad because.
Well, I'm like, sending you some. You're gonna.
I know
get
you
a,
are.
You're gonna get.
It.
You're gonna get a good chunk.
Because, you know, it was like if they did what they did for the Zero Month.
Yeah.
Where it was like one issue a title, I'd be all over that shit, dude. You wouldn't hear me complain at all. But I mean, I get all the Batman books. I'd have to buy 16 issues of Batman.
Yeah, that's a
for
lot.
For 1 month at a dollar more on top of it, even with the discount at DCBS.
Yeah.
That's the only bitching I have, dude. More villains. I'd wish they do a villains book every month. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'd be all over it.
Society of Super Villains. That was a good comic book.
I have the first hardcover of that.
Have you read it yet?
Yeah. Yep.
It's
more really of a Captain Comet.
He's the hero, but. It's such a weird hero to have to be fighting all of those guys.
And so I want to buy the second hardcover, but I haven't.
Do they even have it? Has it come out yet?
Oh, it can't. It's come and gone. I don't think it's sold good.
Oh, I didn't know they had the second volume, or I would have bought it.
I have to look for it. I get all my trades and stuff at cons. Like when Daryl and I go to like New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
There's a dude there that has. I mean, I can't even count how many boxes, and they're all DC trades and hardcovers, and they're all
usually rare to see at a.
And they're all half off.
The only time I see DC hardcovers is when it's the archives, you know.
Yeah, no, this guy. I mean, honest to God, I mean, just boxes upon long boxes of, and they're all DC trades.
Yeah,
DC and Vertigo, and 50% off hardcovers, and it was.
Hey, Chris, did you quickly want to talk about the Kirby issues that we read?
Sure. Yeah, we can do that.
We can do it real quick because we're going pretty long today.
Sorry.
Oh, no, it's not a problem. We're going to cover...
Yeah, no apologies necessary.
if you ever listen to Nothing's On, I kind of do derail the show. So.
No, I love it.
But you, Mike, you usually work with Keith, so I don't know how, you know what I mean? That's got to be.
He derails everything, but.
All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just going to quickly talk about, we finished Mr. Miracle 8. Have you read this stuff, Donnie? The fourth stuff?
No, much to your chagrin, I'm not really a big Kirby guy. No. And not that I don't. You know, I'm not here saying he sucks or anything. I don't feel that way at all. It's just that a lot of his things I just never really... I mean, I appreciate him as an artist and what he did for the business, but his art style I never really got into. And, you know, like when he went to DC, he did a lot of, like, big cosmic things, like the New Gods and things like that. And I just never got into it as a kid, you know?
Yeah, you said you're not into the cosmic...
Yeah, so.
Well, we're on Forever People number 9, Mr. Miracle number 9, and New Gods number 9.
Now, did he write these as well as draw them too?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
And he really, I don't know, I think his stories are really like sci-fi, like really sophisticated. We were talking briefly about the Forever People and how this was like the return of Dead Man. And issue number 9 kind of sees the return of Dead Man. I don't like know like in this time frame what had happened to Dead Man. Like if Rama Krishna or whoever the god is absorbed him again or something, but he's back in this issue of the Forever People.
Yeah, I don't know the continuity aspect of it, but I did look on Comic DB to check out last time, and it looks like at this point he probably had been out of comics for about a year. There was a reprint, you know, of a story earlier in like 72 or 73, whatever this is, but it had been about a year since there was a new comic with Dead Man in it. From the context, it's almost as if like... you know, the last thing that he had done was kind of fulfill his vengeance, or think that he had fulfilled his vengeance on those that killed him.
Yeah, he found the killer, and it kind of like leads you that in this story, like except they say he found the wrong killer.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know if that was like the first time that was revealed.
The Forever People are a bunch of like cosmic hippies. Big Bear, Viking the Black, Mark Moon Raider, Beautiful Dreamer, who I'm going to get a sketch of Beautiful Dreamer in Baltimore, I think. Seraphim. And this one is like a Frankenstein story, which is really kind of cool. It's about this doctor that wants to bring the dead back to life, and for the life of him, he can't do it. He keeps trying and trying and can't do it, but he manages to bring Dead Man back. And I really don't understand how, but he just kind of appears. His name is Doc Gideon.
It was almost as if it was, it's like a side effect. Like he was trying to do something else and didn't even realize that he had brought Dead Man back. Because he's trying to, he's like a Dr. Frankenstein kind of dude.
Yeah.
Trying to create life. You know, it's kind of like things get rolling kind of through some happenstance here, really, because this Doc Gideon, he's a tenant of this older woman, and there's a kerfuffle, as they say, happening outside of her apartment building, and the Forever People are involved. And Big Bear calls her an old magpie, and she takes gets back at him and says, calls him a giant hair bear.
She's got an unusual name, too.
Thing there.
Her name is Trixie McGruger.
There you go, yeah. Yeah, Trixie McGruger.
But she becomes friends with like the Forever People and invites them into a room, and they're hanging out with her, and she has a dress that she's always loved. I guess she was a flapper. A flapper during the jazz age. And she has Beautiful Dreamer change into one of her dresses, and the Seraphim comes in and says, "What kind of nonsense are you wearing?" And he pulls out one of his bullets out of his hats and turns her into this weird go-go dancer dress.
Yeah, he's like, that's horrible. he's a critic of fashion, apparently.
Yeah.
And he zaps her. And I like that, you know, I like that in doing so, he changes her dress from, like, from straps to strapless, and, like, subtracts about, like, six inches from her hemline so that her...
it's like a mini dress.
Yeah, her like there's like maybe like you know like 3 or 4 inches of fabric under her belt. It just like about covers her butt. So you could tell like it's like okay, here's a costume that an old lady recommended, or here's a dress an old lady recommended, and now here is a Beautiful Dreamer as dressed by a young man.
And that Doc Gideon sees sees what happens with those bullets, and he says, "That's the piece of the puzzle I'm missing."
Mm-hmm.
And makes his way over because he was invited to one of her seances. So I guess she's kind of like a mystic.
Yeah, yeah. She's surprised to see him. You get the impression that, you know, because he's a tenant and stuff, she sees him in the hallway and is always inviting him over and stuff, and he always declines.
Yeah.
So she's surprised that he showed up, but, you know, he's using it as an excuse because the way that their building is set up and he could see into her, you know, apartment from his apartment window.
Mm-hmm.
So they all get gather up at the table and get ready to, you know, do a seance.
One thing I found that was interesting is she had known Boston Brand before.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
I didn't know that.
That was a cool twist. You know, like, you find out that Trixie's kind of, she's a sort that's been working, like, carnivals and things like that for years, and, you know, she's got the, it's an act that she's got down, so even she's surprised when, there's actually a result, because, you know, Dead Man's around, and he responds to the seance, and basically scares the shit out of her.
And she tells him that he went after the wrong guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he comes at her pretty intense. You know, she recognizes him through his voice. You know, because he doesn't look like. You know, he looks like Dead Man. He's got just the pale white head and the red costume. So she faints and goes into shock from the whole experience. So I thought that was pretty intense. I liked that scene. I thought that was pretty intense for, you know, what I was expecting.
Yeah.
Kind of to be like something silly, kind of. Not so much.
So he manages to take that cartridge and inject it into his monster and it turns alive and goes after him and crushes his whole... He works at the city morgue and it crushes the... He destroys pretty much all of it.
Yeah, I mean, what a weird, like... What a weird group of people. You know, a mortician that's doing experiments on the side and a medium. I mean, that's a pretty wacky apartment building.
Yeah.
But his monster, like, is just a really big dude. Like,
I wouldn't want to be in that apartment building.
No.
Plus, you got the Forever People hanging out. That's just weird.
Yeah, and you know, Trixie's kind of like makes me think of, you see the like 60s flower child that has, you know, gotten elderly, but still is pretty like hippie like in her fashion, and so she kind of gloms on to the whole Forever People thing pretty easily, and you know they got kind of a similar aesthetic going on, and you know she's got her reminiscences going.
Yeah.
Where she's talking about, you know, back in my day, you know, I danced with all the boys. So yeah, I think my favorite part of the episode was that you know, there's the disturbance of the monster getting loose once Gideon's got him going. And so the Forever People take off after him, and they're running down the street, and the mother box is going off, and all of them keep going except for Big Bear stops in front of the movies. He's like,
he gets distracted.
Horror classic, Milestones. Naturally, you know, there's no accident that they happen to be actually showing a Frankenstein movie. But, you know, I almost forgot about the fact that he did that because the action goes on. We get the Forever People battling. And it's like two or three pages later when Big Bear actually shows up and they're like, "Where the hell have you been?" Like, I went to the movies, man.
Yeah, that was funny as hell. This is the first time I've seen Moon Raider do anything, Mark. Like, he has like this cosmic power coming out of his fists.
Yeah, he was a lot more active this episode. This issue.
Now, how are they connected to the new gods, or are they?
They are from Genesis.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's just a...
They're like hippies that came to the earth.
Yeah, and they're like the High Father on New Genesis. He's basically told all the younger people to stay put and not get involved in the conflict and stuff, and the Forever People are the ones that are disobeying.
Yeah, deviants.
And I mean, ostensibly, I guess they're on Earth to battle Darkseid, and they do come into conflict with them pretty early on, but they definitely get distracted a lot.
They did do a good job, though, of preventing, I mean, hooking up with Sunny Sumo and keeping the anti-life equation away from Darkseid.
And now all these years later, didn't Morrison use these characters in Final Crisis?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Because right,
their names are sounding familiar.
Sunny Sumo used like extensively in his series.
I mean, doing this series, I'm realizing that, you know, they should have given people a glossary of the Fourth World Saga when they published Final Crisis.
Right. Like because
like so much of it is based on this. But yeah, the Forever People, so there's only one more issue after this one, and I was kind of curious, and they disappear for over a decade. You know, no one really uses them until they pick up on them in the mid-80s again.
Didn't they show up briefly in, like, Crisis on Infinite Earths, like in a background or something, or?
Yeah, I think everybody showed up. They had a mini-series,
Yeah, that was around that time.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe it was like DeMatteis or something. Like, there was kind of, I think around that time there was a resurgence of, because a lot of the, after Jack went back to Marvel, a lot of these characters just kind of sat around for a while. You know, and they didn't do much with them for a few years at least, but some of them they didn't really touch for a while, like the Forever People.
Who did Kirby do, the Bounty Hunters series and what the hell was the other one?
For Marvel?
Captain...
A Victory?
Victory, yeah. Like, what company was that for?
Tops.
That was for Tops, okay.
Well, Captain Victory goes back to, like, Kamiko or something. But
Pacific,
the
I think.
Pacific. And the Bounty Hunter ones, I think, are... Tops.
I
can't remember. Okay.
It was all around the same time, like right in the late 80s. He did like stuff for Pacific and for Tops. And
yeah, the Pacific stuff's earlier. A matter of fact, I just acquired like a lot of his independent stuff, like Destroyer Duck and Captain Victory and Silver Star and, you know, a couple of those characters that he created for Pacific.
Did you read the Dynamite stuff that
I have, and I really... I am so into Dynamite. I am just into the...
Here I am derailing it again.
Yeah, I'm like...
Chris is just like, shut up, I want to have lunch.
Do you know what retro means?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. I don't get to talk comics very often on my podcast. That's why I
asked. It's all good. I actually don't care. But...
We derail ourselves a lot, so yeah. It's not.
I'm sorry, Chris. Could you please continue.
Well, I guess, you know, I think at the basically what happens is the issues with the Frankenstein-ish creature, Frankenstein's monster-ish creature. He escapes into like the sewers, Mike, something like that.
Yeah.
It's
a gas, except these are gas lines along the sewer, like huge gas lines.
Right. Yeah.
And he starts breaking up the,
starts
gas leaks and then Dead Man tries to jump into his body and take control of him, but it's a little too little too late. Everything blows up underneath the street.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a cool moment, though, to end the issue on where the body of the monster is laying there, and it starts talking, kind of to the surprise of the Forever People. And naturally, it's Dead Man. So they sense that it's a, you know, a restless spirit, and Seraphim uses his blue cartridge that was the, you know. We've got to say, I think that the way that I expected Dr. Gideon to use the blue cartridge in some sort of complicated scientific manner, and he just tapes it to its forehead.
Yeah, I thought he was going to inject it into his system or something like that.
Yeah. At least use a beaker or something, man. Have some respect for yourself.
Some scotch tape.
Yeah. Duct tape fixes everything.
Yeah. Duct tape.
But so they get the cartridge back, and that's, they use it to actually give Dead Man a corporeal form, and that's the end of the issue. And we'll have actually some more Dead Man in the final New Gods issue.
Yeah, we're almost done with this omnibus.
Or I'm sorry, this is issue 9, so there's 2 more issues of Forever People, but
yeah. Now it jumps us into New Gods number 9, and we get introduced to Forager, who we saw in a DC series. Good Lord, what was the one, Countdown, where Forager was a female that Jimmy Olsen was trying to hook up with. But
The alien chick?
Yeah.
Okay, I kind of remember. See, I remember bits and pieces of Countdown.
Yeah, so Forager, and this is a male. And it's real. This is such a cool story, man. I fucking love this. The cover is freaking awesome. Like, it has Forager on the cover, but then it has, like, Light Ray and Orion on the side of the cover. And, like, these cool, well, if you're a Kirby fan, they're really fucking cool poses. But, This story is cool because it's like, it reminds me of the Inhumans a little bit, in the fact that there's this bug society in Eugenesis that's treated like bugs. Like, they're not given equal status with all the other New Gods. They're considered bugs, like really scavengers. And Forager is kind of like the one bug that always goes up there and he gets some food. Like, he's always sent up there to get food for him and bring the food back to the colony, and he brings them back. He always brings them back food and then takes some of the food. But I think that whole thing is really cool. And if you're into, like, Kirby Crackle and all the Kirby, the art in this freaking book is awesome.
Yeah, it reminded me of Micronauts, which literally has a character named Bug, but the whole thing of being, like, little creatures. It's actually kind of like two stories in this issue. We have that stuff, and then we have the other story, which continues, Light Ray and Orion, the aftermath of Orion's battle with Kalibak, and they don't really, the two stories don't really intersect until the end. Orion's all still messed up, like his face still looks like super ugly, and they just kind of are taking refuge in on the terrace of this woman's apartment. And I like that, you know, in a comic that's about gods from another world and microscopic creatures, probably the most unbelievable thing in the whole thing was that this woman, Eve Donner, pays for her expensive terrace apartment in the city by writing plays. Like, as if, but I guess, you know, Kirby's an artist, so he's setting a story in a world where people appreciate the art, so that's cool.
Yeah,
but she's a little freaked out by Orion's appearance and the fact that these two guys are just showed up in her place. But this gives Orion a chance to rest, and Light Ray is playing the negotiator, kind of, because Orion really isn't interested in giving her really the time of day in terms of reassuring her about their presence there. and Orion wakes up from a nap and, you know, just starts like screaming and yelling about stuff. And
that's awesome, though. He's like at the top of his lungs.
Yeah, like Light Ray's just chilling, eating some soup or something. And Orion asks him, "Where's the enemy now, Light Ray? Where? Where?" And Light Ray says, "Planning, Orion, not shouting." And it has the opposite of the desired effect because Orion just like really flips out at that point. You thought he was shouting before, Light Ray. But yeah, I like it. We're really getting to the point where Orion is showing
his dark side.
Yeah. Yeah. No pun intended, right? But
when Forager escapes, I like how these new Genesis guys have insecticide. They like bomb all the bugs with insecticide, and he has to like dive and save the food. And then he ends up going to this colony where he hooks up with this Prime One. And the Prime One is kind of like his mentor, if you will. Like, he's like guiding Forager, and he knows that he's different than all these other bugs. Matter of fact, here we learn that Mantis is part of these bugs.
And yeah, we get the return of Mantis.
Yeah, he returned back from Earth. And Mantis was hired by... Mantis at the time was given Earth by Darkseid to take over, and he's like a space vampire, and he's one of these bugs. And the Prime One tells him that Mantis is really not a good person, and he needs to try to take him down, but he needs to find Orion to do it. And that's when it gets really weird, because it's like, I guess this society has like this weird thing where they have to sacrifice the Prime One in the ceremonial killing pit every now and then. And Forager tries to rescue him, and it doesn't work out too good.
Yeah. Yeah, this is you know, a part where the where Forager ends up getting his only sort of recourse is a boom tube that gets created. So, you know, Mantis watches as he sort of leaps Captain America style and gets swept up into the boom tube. And I like that, you know, Mantis peers in behind him. We get a shot of from inside the boom tube back at, you know, just Mantis looking into the boom tube, shaking his fist in anger, but which leads to our final page of the boom tube on Earth, and Orion coming out of it in a Forager coming out of it in a crouch, you know, wondering if he's found the place that Orion is at.
And what was it about, though, that you know, Orion and Light Ray show up at the apartment, and Dave Lincoln betrays them. Like, what the hell's that?
Well, I don't know. I didn't think that they betrayed him. It's more like
Turpin showed up.
Turpin showed up and said, "Look, man, you know, we know you're connected to those guys, and we know they're gonna show up here, so you're going to sit tight while we wait with you." And, you know, Dave Lincoln's willing to help out, but he's not going to go against the law. So yeah, I mean, didn't really feel like he betrayed them so much as, you know, they showed up at his place and he didn't really have much of a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where they're left at, you know, until next issue.
And it looks like he's still, like, Orion helped him, I mean, Light Ray helped him heal, but his face is still pretty jacked up. Like, you see him put his mask on, and you can still see a bunch of scars and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not,
He hasn't been able to reform his face back to the pretty face he used to have.
Right.
Now he looks like his mama. Tigra. But this story, the next story was awesome, especially being such a Mr. Miracle fan. We learned the story of Hyman and how, I mean, this is really how Scott escaped. I mean, it's freaking awesome how he escaped. And when he first meets Big Barda, and mm-hmm. I love Big Barda. I mean, I love her every more. Every time I see her.
Yeah, this is the it's a flashback issue, because Mr. Miracle, you know, must have been the most successful, because
it's the best. It really is the best.
Well, and it ran the long. I mean, the other ones, I didn't really notice, but or at the time I didn't notice it, but like when. The last time we covered Jimmy Olsen, I think it was issue 148. That's the last one. That was the last when they're flying back to Metropolis, talking about they need to take a bath. that was actually the last Kirby issue of Jimmy Olsen. We don't have any more coming up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 149 and so on.
Well, I guess it ended with Vic Volcanum, or what is his name?
Yeah, Victor Volcanum.
Victor Volcanum.
Ex-balloonist.
you would love that, Donnie, because he was like a balloonist that had gone bad.
Oh, we got to. I want a job at DC right now because I want to team him up with the Eraser dude.
You could propose that.
There you go.
Yeah, he was pretty. He's pretty awesome, but So I didn't realize it, but after that issue, Jimmy also went into reprints, and I think it ended around like 160 something in issues. So, so then New Gods and Forever People go to issue 11, but Kirby kept doing Mr. Miracle till 16 or 17 or something, and then he left, but the comic kept going till the 20s somewhere.
Yeah, but I think it was one of those ones that came back. Like, it left in 12 cents and then came back in 30 cents or 35 cents.
Yeah, it's also like the
like one Plaz.
Of the creations of Kirby from this period that had the most staying power. I mean, Mr. Miracle has had numerous other solo series, and obviously it was a big part of the given DiMatteis Justice League and stuff like that, so he stays present. And Big Barda makes an appearance in a lot of those as well, it looks like.
But I thought of this Hyman guy, like he was like the dude that got like the Oliver Twist like kinda guy that got all the thieves together. But it was different because that guy was mischievous and he taught him how to steal and be evil. Whereas this guy wants them to, he gathers them to embrace science and creativity, right? I mean, that's his whole thing. And you learn that this guy's the creator of the mother box. He's the creator of the boom tubes. I mean, and he's creating stuff for Mentron. I mean, this guy's the shit.
Yeah, and I guess we should specify that Hyman is spelled H-I-M-O-N.
I almost made a joke there, but I know the show is running long, and I didn't want to derail.
No, I mean, I'm sure we'll say his name a number of other times, and there may be some good opportunities. But I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
it hurt me not to say anything, but it's
yeah. No, have at it. I mean, the only thing I can think of is like
he is a virgin.
He created the I don't know. He created he's the creator of the mother box and stuff like that. So maybe there's some sort of birthing connection there or something.
Yeah.
But the only thing that's been known to, he's invulnerable except for he's been known to be roughed up by horseback riding.
Oh, and gymnastics.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, this issue is awesome. I agree. We see, of course, Scott Free is actually of New Genesis, has grown up on Apocalypse, and basically the people of Apocalypse, like the workers in the Armageddon, which is an awesome name. You know,
it is so awesome.
They're just like, they're completely brainwashed. I mean, they're happy to, you know, just live the life that they are told to. And we get this guy, Wonderful Willick, who's the district protector.
He's really an asshole. He's not really wonderful.
No. And the method of, like, basically they think Hyman has disguised himself as one of them. So Willick's wonderful method of finding them is finding him is to just basically, like, they set their flamethrowers on the crowd and, like, burn to death all the people, knowing that that the flames won't affect Hyman.
Now that's a villain right there, because he doesn't shit around. He's like,
yeah.
I'm just I don't know which one of you is Hyman, so I'm just gonna kill you all.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he just slaughters everybody. You know, saying that they're you know, prepared to die for Darkseid. So
is there a better way to say it than Hyman? Hyman? Hyman.
Hyman.
Hyman instead of Hyman.
Hyman, I guess.
Hyman.
I mean, his character has been around a while, but I've never heard his name said, so.
Yeah.
It's because everybody has the same exact questions that we do right now.
Yeah.
How do you say that?
We'll just call him that guy.
I remember how to say it in health class, but how do you say it?
It's like, does he know his name sounds like? But yeah, what's cool about that guy is his costume is the colors of Mr. Miracle's costume. And some we get the red and the yellow and the green, and Scott Free is not really a willing participant at first, but we meet his group of followers, and among them is a female, Aralee, and she's just basically creating visions of people dancing, and Scott's like, "What the hell's the point of that?" And Hyman points out that, you know, there's a point to creating beauty in the first place. Just, it's a point in itself, like, just creating beauty, especially on a world like Apocalypse, takes a lot, and just doing it is a good thing. But,
it's awesome, though, how she is the link to the Furies. Like, this is, she's the link how Big Barda met, you know, Scott Free.
Yeah, because she's a Fury, and it turns out that she has a tracking device on her, and you know, Big Bard has never met a door that she needed when there's a wall that she can crash through. So, you know, she comes in, and I when I was reading this, I thought it kind of helped to explain, you know, like in previous issue when Barda shows up on Apocalypse, and all of the Furies are, you know, kind of immediately follow in step with her. I got the impression from this issue that really kind of the Furies are, have like a real loyalty to each other, almost a loyalty first, and then, you know, to Darkseid second.
I also got that feeling, because it was like, it was very strange, like, especially later on, it's like, they're more loyal to her than they are to Darkseid, because Darkseid wanted Hyman dead.
Yeah, and they want to protect
their own.
They want to protect Aralee. But they're after you know, wanting to kill Hyman, take him out, like the people know about him, and it's one of those things where he's starting to get a real reputation. They want to snuff him out so he doesn't really create more distress. But he's not too concerned, and they put him in a trap, and you get a sense like he's an escape artist like we've come to know Scott Free is. And like they kill him, and like,
it's an awesome trap though. It's got like all these locks, and then attached to the locks are like these little cylinders where they put dynamite in.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like a mechanical spider with dynamite hands.
It's awesome.
It's like the big bad from the end of Wild Wild West.
Oh man. Yeah, they parade his corpse through the streets, but as we're kind of expecting, like it doesn't really take him out. But we have an interesting meeting between Hyman and Metron. You know, Hyman calls Metron the master of theories, and Hyman calls Metron the master of elements. So it's like they sort of treat each other as equals, and we realize that Hyman's got a pretty strong, he's an important player in this whole thing, that they, you know, they see big things for Scott Free, and Hyman has basically done everything that he can at this point, that he's prepared him, given him the tools and stuff that we've seen Mr. Miracle use in the present, but Hyman says that it's got to be up to Scott to actually renounce Apocalypse. One of the members of Hyman's crew is a traitor. Which God is not really too much of a surprise since his name is Cretan. I like that. So he goes to turn him in, and Willick just like cracks him across the face with his club, and it pretty much kills him. I guess it's called a throw club, because all they really want is the mother box that he's carrying.
But he's the one that couldn't put together a mother box to save his life.
Well, he couldn't get it to work.
Yeah, he couldn't get it to work. It's like everybody else was successful. He can't get. Matter of fact, that's why he got left behind, because they were phasing. They were all able to use their mother box to phase away when the crowds were coming in, busting on Hyman and stuff. And this guy couldn't get his to work, so he got. Even though he was a traitor, they brought him, and then he's. It didn't work to be a good traitor and then get killed right away. That's what this guy does. He's really a good villain because he doesn't shit around. Usually you see a lot of villains that plot and tell everybody their plan and what they're doing. This guy just goes and does his business. If you're not part of the solution, you're dead. And that's what I like about this Willick dude. And he is an asshole because he captures that one female Fury that they were protecting, and she was a dancer. She loved to dance. And what does he do? He puts these contraption high-voltage shock boots on her and takes her ability to walk, kills her. He actually kills her.
Yeah, and that...
And that just sets Barda off! I love that woman! God, she's a strong woman.
Barb's gonna get start to get concerned here. If this,
I think so. Between the sketches and the proclaiming for your love,
yeah. But yeah, it's also kind of like that move is what really, if she wasn't already, sets Barda against him and against what they're trying to do there, and because they're taking out all of the out of all the members of Hyman's crew, and Scott
he chuckles every time.
I know, I can't help it. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
It's the eighth grader in me. Yeah. I'm still regretting not taking typing class. Go ahead.
But yeah, Scott's in a position also where he actually would need her help, because they got these, like, they almost look like swimmer caps that they wear, and Willick pulls it down, and we find out that Scott has grown hair, which is against the rules for Granny Goodness's male troopers. They're all supposed to be bald. So, so that is what sort of unites Scott Free and Barda for the first time, and this is really like a great final moment here for Willick.
It's awesome.
He's like, you guys can, I pretty much take care of you dudes, so I'm gonna sit down, I'm gonna have my dinner. And the guy that delivers the dinner is suspiciously wearing red, yellow, and green. And
he's the waiter.
He drops off Willick's meal and then leads Scott and Barda off. And, you know, it's one of those old school presentation platters with the cover. And Willick lifts it up and it's a big, fat, red bomb.
It's like a little atom bomb.
Yeah.
Blows him up.
Yeah. So that takes care of him. And this is where Hyman kind of passes on his equipment and everything like that to Scott Free and reveals some of, like, the mystery. And we see that Scott Free has had visions of a woman. And
that's awesome how it gives you a footnote,
like,
though.
Yeah. So it's a flashback to his real parentage, and tells us to see New Gods number 7, page 1. But so he takes off, and he's able to escape because of the help of Barda and the Furies. And there's a boom tube, basically a doorway to Earth, and it's been created by Metron and Hyman, and Metron, or, you know, Scott decides to take Hyman's tube. That was for you, Donnie. And
I'm trying not to laugh. I even have my hand over my mouth. See?
Just making it worse. So yeah, Darkseid shows up at the end and basically allows Scott to go, and it seems that he does that because he actually wants that to happen because he knows it'll escalate things.
Escalate the war.
Because he wants a war. He doesn't want, you know, he doesn't want things to stay in their current status where there's a, you know, as long as Scott stays with him, you know, he can't go to war, but if he lets him go, then that means that that he can start the war.
It doesn't make it easy, though. They bombard the area with mass gravity atoms.
Yeah.
And it even, like, is able to hold, like, Big Barda back, whereas Scott manages to through sheer will, make his way through it into the boob tube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that kind of wraps things up. But yeah, I like this issue a lot. I mean, because I have taken to Scott Free and Bart also. Like, I haven't yet, you know, screamed my love for her on the streets.
In the streets.
In the streets of my village or anything like that. But
I like how she grabbed that thing, though. She grabs that piece of junk and just throws it at that plane that was bombarding them with lasers. The Death Bird, they call it. She's so awesome, man. She is so sexy.
Just admiring the female body in action.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was trying to say there. As I said to Hyman more times in the last 30 minutes than I have in my entire life. So, yeah, I'm just like, my libido is rattled. But So I think we got two issues left in this volume. Do you want to just finish the volume next time, or do you want to dip into the fourth volume also?
I think we could just finish this volume.
Yeah.
The fourth volume's got to be small, right? I mean, there's not left.
Well, it's actually got like I was looking at the table of contents earlier actually, and it's like you get the last couple issues of New Gods and Forever People, and then you get a ton of Mr. Miracle in a row, so you'll be loving that. And so, then it also
should just do the two and then add the first issue of the next one, because we'll probably end up in a weird odd number anyway.
Yeah, and it's also got the Hunger Gods or Hunger Dogs that he came back later on and did. Yeah. It's also in the fourth volume, and
you know, I have never read that, so that'll be interesting.
Nice, yeah. So, I mean, that might even be, we can look at the length of it, but it may be something we can do on its own or something.
Well, cool.
We'll see.
Well, Donnie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. It's been a blast.
We got to talk some more comics soon.
I could do this all day. I've talked to you guys more than I've probably talked to anybody this week.
We talked a lot. I mean,
yeah, well, that's like, this is the only podcast I do. So I'm like the person outside of my like family and my relationship I talk to the most probably is somebody that lives in Colorado. I'm good with it, man.
Yeah, it's sweet.
No, but yeah, you're always welcome. It's been a good time. It's been nice having you on the show, man.
Thanks, I appreciate it. I will take you up on that too.
Nothing's on.
What's that?
Plug your podcast.
Oh, okay. Well, you could find me on Nothing's On with Daryl Taylor and Jim Dietz.
Who just had a baby.
Yes, he just had a baby yesterday as we record this. I don't know when it's coming out, but
yeah.
And you could catch us there on the Taylor Network of Podcast.com. As you could tell, I don't do this part. I don't know. And you could also find me periodically on the HHWLOD Network of Podcasts at HHWLOD.com. I do Tales from the Attic, where I reach into my attic, into a random long box, grab one issue, and read it to you, and we make fun of it together. And
deadly serious if you randomly select a comic?
It's very hard because I have to do it. I mean, that's the challenge. That's the challenge I made to myself.
It's a book about cancer. Oh, like, no.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I got to be doing cancer jokes, which aren't really all that good. But
yeah, you just need to go through and throw out all your cancer comics. I mean,
like I did this whole every Christmas I do one for every week in December so people could listen to it while they do Christmas shopping, and I did a Marvel team up issue, and it was Spider-Man and the Watcher, and this whole thing had like kidnapping, cocaine dealers.
Oh, man.
And like the only thing I kept going through my mind is like, what the hell is going on in the Marvel universe at Christmas? Like,
it's not good.
But yeah, so I do that, and it's fun. And you can catch me on the Black Box podcast there too every once in a while when Sean and I get together.
He's taking a sabbatical away from the internet for a while.
Yeah, a little bit. He's going through. He's had a rough week, we'll say, or a rough couple of weeks. So he's just going to take some time off, recharge his batteries, and get back to it.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Got to do it sometimes.
Yep.
But, yeah, I would say, like, if, you know, you're listening to this and you like this podcast, Tales from the Attic, it's a pretty close, like, jumping off point, I would say, from this show, you know, or if they like listening to you, you know, recap the stuff you read for this show.
So what he's saying is he encouraging you to jump off our podcast and go on to Donnie's.
Jumping off, right. It's a lot shorter, guys.
It's only about 20 minutes, half hour. Yeah.
You could listen to like his output for like half the year time it takes to listen to one of our shows. So
It's going to be funny. Like, I'm going to go downstairs and my wife's going to be like, you went up there at 10:15 in the morning. And it's 1:45 in the afternoon.
Time to eat.
And I'm going to say, well, I talk to you this much too if you read comics. So. You know, I try to get her on the comics, and I figure Walking Dead would be perfect because she likes horror movies and stuff.
Does she like the series?
She loves the series, and she always asks me, she goes, well, how does it, what goes on in the comic around this point? And I said, there's 17 volumes in the other room. Go find out.
You know what's I actually love that they're so different.
Me too.
I love it because as I'm taking my journey around through the trades or the hardcovers, I'm seeing like, okay, this is similar, but it's not. This is, you know, this is awesome. I'm enjoying it. I'm glad they're not the same.
Yeah, if it was the same thing, why would you bother?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like watching it because you know what's going to happen. So.
Yeah.
It's a smart move because, like, you can kind of compare that to, like, the Game of Thrones show where, like, everyone kind of knew what's going to happen ahead of time. I mean, like, it's not exactly the same, but they're following the main beats and stuff like that. So there's no real surprise for somebody that has read the books.
Right.
I mean, I think it just, like, keeps you more engaged if you're someone knowing that they're going to have a lot of people that, you know, have read the comics. Keeps you a little bit more engaged and stuff, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. Well, this has been Geek Brunch Retrocast, and you can find us at Geek Brunch Retrocast. No, geekbrunchpodcast.com. Mike is on Twitter, and he is Mike Myers Brunch, and I am on Twitter, and I am MythMakingETC. Are you on Twitter, Donnie?
I am on Twitter occasionally, and it's just Donnie Salvo.
Oh, that's right. MythMakingETC at gmail.com, Mike at comicbooknoise.com, forums for geeks,
Facebook, Geek Brunch Podcast.
Yep.
I think that's it.
PayPal, any donations, the email addresses I gave you.
Help Chris get the next Kirby omnibus.
Give me money or I'll quit the show.
Yeah, gonna have to jump into Commandy or something next.
Probably not gonna work. They're like, well, Mike, next time it's just like, nobody gave any money, so Chris is gone. No, I already have the next omnibus.
Leave an iTunes review, damn it.
Yeah, leave an iTunes review or I will quit the show.
Yeah, leave one for Nothing's On, too, or Chris will quit the show.
There you go. Well, thank you for joining us, and we'll have to talk again soon. I always enjoy talking to you, Donnie. Hopefully, thanks, are you going to Baltimore?
I'm not this year. I'm going to shoot for next year because I can't do Heroes next year.
Yeah.
Because it's going to conflict with my work schedule, so I'm going to definitely try and do. Baltimore's one of the cons I want to do.
Yeah, well, me and Chris will both be there. I'm going to meet Chris for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
When you go to Chris Campbell Con, send me some Facebook messages of the stuff that's there and make Daryl take it home.
Nice. Yeah, I'm actually sending the retro version of myself. Mike and I are going to hang out as children.
That's right. I'm going to be a character called Hyman.
Oh, wow. Chris has a mask sewn to an afro, too. That's weird.
Yeah, we're gonna do our Hyman cosplay.
That'd be awesome. I think I can make that costume.
Yeah, you just need, like, two big...
Nobody in the world would know who he is except for you.
Yeah, it's like, exactly.
Like, who the hell are you?
You and like, Kirby. Yep.
No, the guy walking around with two big pink pieces of styrofoam tape.
All right. Well, you guys have a good Sunday.
Yeah. Yep. On that note, let's. Yeah. All right.
On that note, talk to you guys later. Right, bye.
Take it easy. Bye. Yeah.